hearing.
It's what you're hearing.
Listen.
It's what you're hearing.
Listen.
It's what you're hearing.
Listen. Who the fuck is that guy?
X don't give it to you. Fuck, wait for you to get it on your own. X don't deliver to you. Knock, knock. Open up the door. It's real. It's a non-stop.
What's going on?
Nothing much. Watching old fights.
How old?
A couple years ago. It's Poirier versus Green, Bobby Green.
Yes, back, not back AJ to, Green.
No, and not Mean Joe Green either.
Welcome to MMA and Stuff on HalfGuarded.com. My name is Matt. That is Michael. You can hear this damn show on iTunes and Google Play if you don't want to go to HalfGuarded.com. I kind of want to get right into things, yeah, if that's okay with you, sir.
No, somebody's late tonight, so yeah.
It depends how you define late. I don't see a schedule posted anywhere for when we're supposed to start this show. Anyways, so I think the last 7 days was probably the greatest 7 days in probably the history of MMA and pro wrestling ever. Just an awesome, awesome week in so many different ways. On Saturday night, it was, what date was it? April 7th, 2018 in Brooklyn, New York at the Barclays Center. We had UFC 223. But to me, that pay-per-view wasn't even in the main story. I think when we talked last week, we already knew Max Holloway was scheduled to face Khabib Nurmagomedov in the main event for the lightweight title because Tony Ferguson tripped on a cord and tore his LCL and wasn't able to compete against Khabib. However, things went awry before we even got to Saturday. There were two big issues. Number one was Conor McGregor attacking the fighter's bus. Number two was the fact that Max Holloway was deemed medically unfit to compete by the New York State Athletic Commission. I don't know where you'd like to start, Mr. Coughlin, but I'll let you take it from there.
I think Max's issue is more, it's kind of separate from the rest of them.
Okay.
Because like if you address Max Holloway, then you've done it. Everything else flows, like you can't talk about, I mean, like who was getting offered fights, who wasn't getting offered fights, why, without acknowledging the cokehead destroying a buzz.
Right. Is my timeline correct that it was after the weigh-ins, though, no? Or wasn't it? What were they coming from? They were coming from a media day or something? Because essentially what happened is this. I'm sure everybody's heard the story, but we'll run
through it. No. There was no way it was. No, it was before weigh-ins. He was in jail. And he was running away or whatever. And like, if this had been like after weigh-ins, before people had rehydrated, that really would have been a dick move.
It was definitely before weigh-ins. But let's back up even more. I think last week we even touched on it because it didn't seem like a huge deal at the time. But Khabib cornered Artem Lobov, who is a training partner of Conor McGregor, in a hallway in the hotel or wherever in the arena, got in his face and asked, "Where's your Burger King?" in reference to Conor McGregor in the Burger King commercial for the spicy chicken sandwich. And he also told him not to talk shit because Artem essentially said that Khabib pulls out of fights all the time and that Khabib's a pussy. And then Khabib and his guys got in Artem's face, and that kind of made the rounds in the MMA media world. It wasn't a huge story, but it was something. I think we touched on it last week, but supposedly that was the impetus for Conor McGregor immediately taking a jet with basically 20 guys from
SPG, like
different
deal
fighters.
The deal with Artem and Khabib, like this shit happens every fucking show. Like you always see guys like walk around the MGM, they always get something, and it's like there's Tony Ferguson last one I remember, like Tony Ferguson lipping off to a Diaz brother or some shit like that. Like it happens. Yeah,
Michael Bisping
was so
is
minor.
Notorious. Bisping does it every show. He gets into it with somebody.
That's true. He's a hero.
It's good. So anyway, the idea was Connor saw this and said, fuck that. I'm going to fly over on my private jet. He brought like 20 guys from Ireland, probably guys who he trains with at SBG. And they basically...
By the way, how awesome is that? Think about it. Like, a lot of these guys, like even like SBG, like they still have regular people that train there. Like, it's not all pros. Like, they're probably running like kids classes, and they have like up and coming guys who are like 17 or like really into this. Imagine like you're some guy like me. You're just like, I'm gonna go train jiu-jitsu for a little bit. And Conor McGregor walks in all coked out, going, "Everybody on the fucking airplane, we're going to America. It's gonna be awesome."
Hope you brought your passport to train that week. So whatever the
Robert rumor, Reebok.
The rumor is some guys from the Mac Life, which is Conor McGregor's like MMA website, supposedly let Conor and these guys into the arena. They knew Conor was coming and let him in, and essentially they ran into like the car.
Wait, that's really good. I like that we have to act like, how could Conor McGregor get into the arena?
Right.
Yeah. It'd be really weird for Conor McGregor to show up at the fucking UFC when, like, really, like, if he knocks on the door, somebody's going to go, "Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. McGregor, you don't have a pass on." Like, really, well, it's fucking Conor McGregor. Jeez, fucking crap. Oh, he'd be snuck in the back?
That's the rumor. That's what Dana was saying, and, you know, he's very trustworthy. So, then, essentially, Conor and all these guys basically run at this bus that had one whole crew of fighters. I think there were 13 fights originally scheduled, so it would have been, you know, 13 guys and women on this bus. And essentially they started throwing chairs. Conor managed to grab a hold of like a dolly, like a two-wheeler you use to move like cases of beer around. Chucks it at the side of the bus. Window shatters. It cuts Michael Chiesa's forehead. Not badly, but he had blood dripping down his head. It also
more than you want to be cut the day before a fight.
Right. It also, apparently, glass got in Ray Borg's eyes, even though he was wearing glasses. I think Rose Namajunas was, like, the seat behind the two of them, and she was a little shooken up. There's all video of this. There's, like, a Felice Herrig video came out first. But then on UFC Embedded, they even aired, like, a HD, you know, 1080p, whatever, high-quality video of this stuff. So it's all out there, and it's clearly Conor. He ended up getting arrested and spent the night in jail, had to post, like, I think a $50,000 bail, which was paid by Dylan Danis, of all people. Quite a weird, weird day there. Obviously, this incident led to several fights being canceled as well, but before we even get into that dynamic of the story, what did you make of Conor's behavior here, and how do you punish him? Do you at all? Do you think he should be suspended by the UFC? How do you think they should handle this whole situation with Conor?
They're not gonna do anything to him.
Do fucking nothing.
But basically, I mean, when some of the comments Dana had, they're along the lines of like, you know, like, I see what everybody else do in other sports, and this is the worst thing that happened, so it's not that bad. Like, he was immediately downplaying it, like, a day or two later, I think, when he realized, oh, yeah, we're going to make a lot of money with this fucker. And they will. That's the thing, is, like, whether Conor... I think certain guys... Well, Conor's very Trumpian. At a certain point, you can always say, well, you know, is he out of control? It's like, you know what? It seems to be working. Like, everything Conor does, if you were to plan it, that's kind of what you do. You'd go out there, you'd hijack the show, to basically drum up tons of interest in your number one contender and all this shit. At the same time, I don't get the impression Conor's all that, like, analytical and, well, you know, smart. I think he's just kind of an idiot, but he makes, you know, maybe we just all want to see his life, and sometimes people's lives just play out in a good way. Somebody's got to be crazy like this, and I mean, personally, I don't think that he anticipated that dolly break in the window.
Neither
like,
did I.
It really, like when I was watching this, I didn't really know what was happening. I'm just watching it, and I'm going, "Oh, like I thought for sure it bounced off the window. It's a fucking window on a bus. Like,
right.
Those things are always plasticky to me, and I also kind of thought, like, the Dalek couldn't be that heavy. I mean, Connor's not a huge dude if he just launches this thing. We're not talking a massively heavy thing here, but, oh, then the thing shattered. And with the way it shattered, like, everybody kind of stopped and went, oh, what the fuck's going on? Meanwhile, Connor's still running around like a crazy man, which is just weird. Whereas everybody else had that same feeling about them, and I don't know why, but it reminded me of the riots and the anarchy at Charlottesville when that poor girl got run over by the car. And it just seemed like after that girl got run over by the car, like, that shit stopped. Like, I think that was, like, the moment when, like, Antifa and all this stuff, like, they're gone. You don't hear about this shit. Nobody's doing anything. I think that was, like, the moment when all of a sudden your bullshit cosplay became real, and everybody's like, whoa, what the fuck's going on here? And so Connor launched that dolly through the window. Everybody went, all right, hold on a second. You guys are fucking with glass here. Like, glass is like fire. It's just a little too uncontrollable. And then you see what happens. Ray Borg has it in his eye. Mikey O'Kiesa's skull is getting cut or whatever. Oh, not his skull, but, you know, the skin on his skull. And, meanwhile, Conor McGregor, you know, you got arrested. You went to jail. No, nothing's going to probably really happen to you. I'm sure it'll be fine. But, dude, you went to jail for doing something. Something that you could go to prison for. Like, if they really wanted to, you could throw a guy, you can give him 6 months for that. You wouldn't.
Well,
you
I think
probably wouldn't, but you could.
He's charged with two misdemeanors and a felony, right? The criminal mischief, I think, is a felony.
I didn't even see what he was charged with. Oh, I know, yeah, the criminal mischief is one of my favorites. I
like
that.
I know you like that one. That's why I mentioned it. Do you think, like, for his sake, he'd be better off with some sort of punishment or something? Because I feel like with him, things are escalating. You know what I mean? He had the thing at Bellator where he jumped in the cage and, like, shoved the ref. And it's like every time things get a little more dramatic, a little more dangerous, a little more dumb. And I wonder if he could use more than a slap on the wrist now, because what's the next thing going to be? Like, how's he going to top this? Does he have that mentality that, oh, shit, what do I got to do now to top the bus incident and canceling four fights at UFC 223? Like, is that how he thinks?
I don't think he does think that way.
Yeah.
I think he's just doing. Now, he may need a course correction just because you don't want another John Jones on your hands or something.
Right.
But, I mean, personally, again, what kind of punishment are you going to do if you're the UFC? Like, you're going to, like, what does suspending him mean? Like, it's not like there's a drug, there's no, like, nothing in advance. It's just a purely discretionary, you know, suspension. Nobody knows what the fuck that is.
Yeah, but,
what,
I mean,
gonna go, what are they going to say? You're suspended 6 months? Mm-hmm. 9 months, he's just going to be like, okay, guys, I want to fight in December. You're suspended until December. Like, nobody's going to believe it. And if they can just find him some money, Connor's the kind of guy, I get the impression, that will pay this shit. He will look at it and go, because he will see it as like a big-time baller gangster move. Just go in there and throw this off and be like, oh, yeah, you know what? Yeah, UFC, fuck this shit. I'm giving all of them a bonus for their troubles. Just to prove that he's got so much money that he could literally buy a third of a UFC pay-per-view card just for fun.
On that note, while we're talking about fighter pay, so a lot of guys lost out on fights. There were four fights canceled. And this is off the top of my head, I don't have this down. Artem Lobov was pulled from the card because he was involved with the bus. So his fight with Alex Caceres was canceled.
By the way, I hope they actually fire Artem. Just like in pro wrestling. Just so they fire his little buddy, just like when they get rid of Brutus Beefcake, teach Hogan a lesson.
And then we also had the Holloway situation. He couldn't, they weren't going to let him finish making weight, essentially. So Holloway was pulled from the fight.
Based on the Athletic Commission just looking at him and going, hey, he didn't look good.
Yes, it didn't sound scientific. Sound like typical New York, to be honest. That's also a storyline that didn't get much play this weekend, was the incompetence of the New York State Athletic Commission. It just continues on from, you know, breast implants and guys paying off a fine and being able to fight again in a month, that sort of thing. But anywho, there's a lot to unpack here. So Artem and Caceres was canceled. Holloway's out, so now Khabib needs an opponent, and they're scrambling for somebody to fight Khabib. The first person they had lined up was Anthony Pettis, but Pettis wanted more money, and the UFC turned that down, so they didn't want to pay him more to fight Artem on 24 hours notice. Then the next person in line was Paul Felder, who
what a moron, in, by the way. Like, what the fuck? Yeah, come on, look at your career, dude. Like, this is it. This was God. This was God opening a window for you after you close the door or whatever the fuck it is. Like, take the chance, dumbass. I'd have taken it.
Yes.
I mean, I could have made weight, but, you know.
But you could have beat Khabib handily.
Oh, yeah. Fuck yeah.
Then we also had Paul Felder as a potential person to fight Khabib. He weighed in at 155. But the New York State Athletic Commission said he was not ranked in the UFC rankings, and therefore it was an unfair matchup for him to fight Khabib. Why they were going to let
one of that's the best of all time. That's the best one I've ever heard. Like I remember there was something about that once in Ohio. Like okay. I can't remember who it was.
Does it involve CM Punk?
I thought it was going to actually at one point, but. I remember there was some fight one time that was going to get booked, or somebody's thinking about booking it, and that question came up when they tried to assert that. And I think it's happened on smaller shows. I mean, I know it happens on smaller shows, and which it should. That absolutely should happen. It shouldn't happen when it's fucking Paul Felder, a real professional fighter.
Right, and the UFC rankings are kind of horseshit anyway.
Yeah.
But that's a different topic, too. So then we get to Ally Aquinta.
What would they have said way back when Matt Serra got a title shot because he won a reality show?
Aquinta was initially scheduled to fight Felder, but they decided to go with Aquinta, because he was ranked. He's got whatever, a 4-fight win streak, and he ended up getting the fight with Khabib. The problem was Aquinta weighed at 155.2 pounds, so he wasn't at championship weight, but he weighed in with his underwear. So later in the day, they weighed his panties, and they weighed 0.2 pounds. So Dana White considered a title fight, but the New York State Athletic Commission still did not.
I mean, look, the Athletic Commission's right, I guess. I mean, it didn't matter, but it's so stupid. I wrote about this a long time ago, how I thought the UFC should just try to do everything they can to avoid the athletic commissions for reasons like this. What the fuck? It's a title. They literally just give people titles sometimes. Like, in the past, yeah. They just said to somebody, here, you're champion now. And they went, oh, thanks, I'm champion now. Jose Aldo got it. Ronda Rousey got one. Dominic Cruz got one. You know, lots of people have gotten them. And you want to talk to me about the sanctity of title? Again, the UFC has actually done a decent job historically until recently now, where we would have had, what, 3, maybe 4 fucking people running around calling themselves UFC lightweight champion? And you fuckers want to tell me, oh, that it's not an official title fight because he's 155.2. Who gives a fuck what the athletic commission say? Fuck off. Like, what, if Dana walked in the cage and handed it to Aquinta, with some athletic, like some official run in there and just knock it out of his hands, like, no, we don't recognize you as champion, then they'd have to blur the belt out on TV or some shit.
Some shit like that, yeah. Well, I mean, the whole thing was a disaster and a clusterfuck of epic proportions, because a lot of it was based on Ferguson not being able to fight in the first place. And, like, that's where it all started to crumble. Because then they rushed in Holloway, who was supposed to cut 30 pounds in 6 days and lost 10 pounds on the 18-hour plane ride. Like, we talked about that last week. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, I don't know if this is going to work. Like, we analyzed the fight, and we're like, can Holloway stop Khabib's takedowns? Is he going to gas early? All this shit. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, is he really even going to be able to make weight? And the weirdest part of that whole situation with Holloway was, he was on schedule to make weight. He said he was going to make weight. George Lockhart, his nutritionist or whatever, said he was going to make weight. But the New York Athletic Commission didn't like how he looked and pulled him. So you've got Connor with the bus knocking out Chiesa and knocking out Ray Borg and Artem getting pulled because he was involved. Then you've got Felder and Pettis without fights now because, Jesus Christ, I can't even keep track. But the bottom line was, like, four fights were canceled, mostly because of Connor here. So the question was to Dana, I think Helwani posed it to Dana at one of the press events, was like, how are the fighters getting paid? All the people on the bus that can't fight and all these canceled fights. And Dana said, oh, we're going to pay them. And Ariel, to his credit, I know neither of us are the biggest fan of his, said, is it the show money or is it the win bonus as well? And Dana's response was, we aren't that rich.
Yeah, you are. You fucking cheap bastards. Yeah, you are. If you hear a dog in the background, Samson here has kennel cough.
That sounds terrible. Oh, my God. Oh, trust,
yeah, it was like this all night on Saturday night.
Sounds like it reminds me of you and your vape pen.
Yeah. But he's better for the most part now, aren't you, buddy? Anyways, I wonder which one I was going to rant about on this one now.
Dana being cheap.
Oh, yeah. It's four fucking bonuses. What is it? Maybe 250 grand? Maybe 250 fucking $1,000 at most? You don't have extra 250 grand? They fucking guarantee you those guys dropping, getting knocked out of the card, easily added enough excitement of $250,000 worth of pay-per-view buys. Like, I bet you enough people heard that these four fights got knocked out and went, holy fuck, this thing's out of control. Let's see what's going on. And that was probably worth at least 5 or 6, 10,000 extra buys. And that's got to be $250,000. I can't do math, but I'm sure it's around that.
Well, what do you think for, like, what do they do for Holloway in a situation like this?
I have no idea.
Like, he flew in on 6 days' notice, is planning on fighting Khabib, doing everything he can to make weight, did everything he was supposed to. I mean, besides take a title fight on 6 days' notice, which is probably ill-advised, but whatever. He said he was going to do it, and it looked like he was, and the athletic commission told him to stop. Like,
I'd give him a couple grand or whatever.
A couple grand? I bet that was $1 million payday. They had to offer him $1 million to do that. He's a champ moving up on 6 days' notice to fight Khabib, who wrestles bears his whole life. Like, come on.
Oh, I know, but look, if you're the UFC, you could argue, hey, look, you told us you can make the weight no problem. You didn't do it. And they didn't tell that to anybody else. Blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I would give him, I mean, I pay him his money. He's your champion. You want to take care of him. I can't see a big problem there because he wasted like 4 days of his life and he got a free trip to New York. He got a lot of publicity. He didn't have to train at all. He didn't even have to fight. Like, seriously, okay, he had let's say 12 hours of dieting there. You know, maybe he had two uncomfortable days. I think that's what, worth 25 grand? If you throw 25 grand and they'd be like, and we'll get you first class back to Hawaii, it's all right. He's probably going to be there for some sort of, for all we know, he was going to be in New York for that press conference they did anyways.
Maybe. Could have been. So then you've got a guy like Alex Caceres who just gets his show money, and obviously Pettis gets his show money. Felder gets his show money. I mean, I'm assuming Artem doesn't get paid at all. I'm hoping.
I have no idea.
It's weird. The whole thing's weird. It's like a minor thing, but Dana just came off so bad because you're talking, like you said, maybe a couple hundred grand at the most, and you already budgeted win bonuses for those four fights anyway. You had a win bonus. Like, split the win bonus between the guys if you have to. You were 50 and 50. We'll give you each your regular plus another 25 grand. You guys can split the win bonus. Something like that, because then you're still on budget. Like, they saved money on the show because they didn't pay any of those guys win bonuses. They didn't pay eight guys win bonuses. Nine guys if you count Holloway.
Yeah, and again, I'm sure there's some, they took some sort of financial hit because they had nothing on Fight Pass. I'm sure there's something to that.
People cancel Fight Pass? Nobody cancels Fight Pass.
No, I'm sure there's probably some sort of advertising that went on with that. I don't know. Look, it has a value. They wouldn't do it if it didn't have some sort of value. And you can calculate the value loss there, I'm sure. But yeah, just give them their fucking money. Pay them all their money. Make sure everybody gets paid well because...
And it also just establishes goodwill. Be like, you know what, it's not something we always do, but we thought because of the situation, it warranted it. But now the follow up question is what happens with Connor? Like, there was talk about Michael Chiesa like filing a police report and possibly suing Connor. Do like guys like Ray Borg and Michael Chiesa have cases against Connor?
Oh, they have cases. And they would win, and that's why Connor will just give them a bunch of money, and they'll go away. They're not going to get filthy rich, or they're going to get paid all their entire contract, less what the UFC paid them. Plus, I'm sure they'll get paid. So let's say Michael Chiesa was getting 50-50, because I like easy numbers.
Mm.
So he's going to argue, hey, I lost my chance to fight, and they'll be like, all right, you could have won. And even if they say, they could actually argue he's not that good. He had this much chance of winning. Therefore, that $50,000 is worth, he's really only worth about, he has a 75% chance of winning, so he should only get 75% of it. You could argue that, but they're not going to do it. Because it's what, we're talking 10 grand or whatever, 10, 15 grand they're going to argue over. And so, you give him that, you throw in some extra for pain and suffering and shit like that. Like, there is harm that happened to them physically and all that, but I mean, honest goodness, it's for Connor, if he's out of pocket, I don't know, 150 grand on all this. Maybe 300 grand. That's it. Like, he's going to pay it. He's not going to fight this.
I wouldn't think so. Supposedly Dana said he apologized that, you know, those people got hurt on the bus or whatever. He wasn't trying to do that, but at the same time, he's like, it needed to be done. Like, what a douchebag. Because, somebody talked to your friend in a hallway and put his hand on his neck. Like, fuck off. Like, it's just so immature. And I know it's, like, a tough guy thing, and it's MMA, and it's alpha male, and all that bullshit. But, like, you look like such a fucking immature douche that, like it just screams, like, Jersey Shore. Like, just punk.
It's so, like, it'd be what, look, if Connor had been there already, and this had just kind of happened while he was there, I could have seen it.
Yeah.
He fucking flew an airplane from Ireland. Like, what? You're telling me in that entire plane flight, when you probably, he was able to take a nap and still was angry. Like, come on.
I don't think you were angry because
your buddy, look, I'm not saying it's cool they punked your buddy. He didn't get hurt and he's still going to fight. Now, maybe Connor's always going to come.
Yes.
It's probably, because it does seem odd that he would fly, he's so close to Artem that he would fly to America to defend his honor, but he wasn't close enough that he was going to be there to watch him fight. Like, there's something off about that.
There's been some debate that Connor was going to be there anyway, because I think Dana even mentioned it at one point, that they were going to renegotiate his contract and talk about his next fight and get things moving so he could fight again. So supposedly he was coming anyway, but...
Yeah, I'm sure he was going to be there, and all I want to know is that this whole thing, somehow, like, Artem Lobov is the Archduke Ferdinand of the UFC.
What? Explain.
Archduke Ferdinand was the gentleman that got assassinated from Austria, and his death kicked off World War I.
Right.
Nobody really knows why World War I started. It's kind of one of those, like, people know it, but you only know Franz Ferdinand, besides the song, because he's responsible.
It was a band, right?
Band, whatever. But, you know, again, it's not like it was Austria. It's not a big country or anything like that. It's not like it's they killed the King of England or something like that. He's an archduke. I don't even know if it's a real thing. And Artem Lobov is the same thing here. Like, when they look back at all this craziness, it's all started because Artem Lobov was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Mm.
It's Artem, all this happened because Artem Lobov is in the UFC. What the fuck? Artem Lobov is not worth any of this. And if you went back in history, all you would have had to do is say after the Ultimate Fighter, this guy's not very good. Let's just not have him in here. Why? Because in a couple of years, his coked up buddy here is going to throw something through a fucking window of a bus. Over Artem Lobov. He was getting angry and throwing a dolly through a window to try to kill Khabib because Khabib insulted Artem Lobov. Artem is Russian. He's not even Irish. He's from Russia. They probably have like a legitimate gripe with him. He's a traitor. He's a traitor to Khabib's people. Khabib was in the right, and I don't say that very often about the Muslims, but damn it, when the Mohammedans are right, the Mohammedans are right.
Do you know who shot Archduke Ferdinand?
Oh, if I would I hear it, it might sound familiar, but I don't know it, no.
Gavrilo Princip. Like, that's who Artem is. He's the guy who shot him. He's not even the main character. He's the assassin that no one needs, they even know his name. And I think the only reason I know that name is from the hell is it called? Hardcore History, that podcast. Because I'm a loser. That's why I know that. Anyway, Mr. Cool over there in your mom's basement with your puggle. UFC 223 actually happened when all this was said and done. Went from 13 fights down to 9 when
which was awesome.
In the end,
do all these shows like this, all shows should be 9 fights. Maybe
I'd be okay
I could
with
even
that.
See I could see 8. I'd be
alright
with
that'd
8.
Be awesome. I'd love
to be honest to goodness, I just had a revolutionary idea. They book these arenas. They have all these people coming into town, right? They want to watch fights. You want to get the guys more attention. I think that all UFC events should be 2 days. The first day should be the undercard. The second day should be the main event. I would have something to do on Friday nights and Saturday nights. It wouldn't take all of my time. I could just spend like 3 hours each night. It'd be awesome.
That's an idea. So in the end, the show ended up doing 17,026 people in the Barclays Center and a $3 million gate, which I believe is the biggest sporting event ever at Barclays Center, which, I mean, it's the home of the Nets. I guess it's not saying a lot, but even so, people still went. I don't think there were many refunds. I think technically in New York you can get a refund if the main event's, like, canceled within 48 hours of the show or something. So the show still did well. It drew well. No, I haven't heard anything about buys as far as how well it did, if any of this Conor hype really amounted to people going out and buying the show, or if Khabib's really a draw yet. I haven't seen any information on that yet. Probably next
week. Think about this. Something. Remember, last week, when we last spoke last week, Dana was saying that this thing was trending higher than anything in like 2 years or some shit like that, and that was before Conor showed up. That was before Conor showed up. So if he was telling the truth, they're very rich right now, and they should definitely pay those guys.
On top of it, when Conor presumably returns, granted, he may never fight again. This might all just be horseshit. But if he fights again and he fights Khabib, how many buys does that show do?
2 million, at least.
I agree. I was thinking like 2.5. I think it's huge. But maybe I'm in the bubble and I'm confused. Because a lot of times I'll ask people who don't, like normal human beings who like read the newspaper and stuff, did you hear anything about Conor? And like a lot of people hadn't heard about it, which I was kind of surprised. They're like, no, what happened? I'm like, I destroyed a bus and 4 fights were canceled. Then I had to explain this 30-minute story to them afterwards where they fade out about 10 minutes in.
A lot of people probably did hear about it. Their core demographic probably heard about it. And even if you haven't heard about it, you will.
Yeah.
And when you do hear about it, like, it's a real easy, very visual story, so it's going to stick with people. You know, it's not like you have to explain, like, you know, John Jones ran after a jogger the night before. You go, really? Yeah. How do we know this? He told everybody. By the way, in hindsight, I bet he's full of shit on that. I bet John Jones just beat the shit out of some dude in a park. It was claimed that he was a mugger.
I bet somebody was actually chasing him.
But he was the mugger.
He stole someone's wallet and chased
him. He stole this old lady's purse, and then this guy's like, hey, stop. He goes, this is my purse, and twisted it in his head to the point where he's like, yeah, it is my purse. I've been robbed.
The other thing, I don't mean to poke fun because... But bottom line is, like, the people on the bus, they weren't seriously hurt. Yeah, they train for these fights. It sucks. It's a shitty situation. I'm not saying it's a good thing. But one of the UFC, like, executives, Reed Harris, I think he used to work in WEC, he put a message up on Twitter where he thought that everyone on the bus was going to die. He thought this was the end of their lives. He put this on Twitter, and then he deleted it a couple hours later. But You thought you were going to die? Like, what a drama queen. Like, he's in that embedded video. It's like episode 5, UFC 223, episode 5, embedded. He's on the phone talking to Dana. They show him. And he wrote on Twitter, "I thought I was going to die." Are you fucking... How? How? How would he have died?
He looks like the big fat gay dad on Modern Family. And he's out there, he's dramatic, "I'm gonna die, I'm gonna die, oh, it was the end of the world, there's glass everywhere, after the first blast came through, oh, I was worried about a second round, we thought it could have been terrorism of all things, who knows?" And it turns out, it was just Dolly, and he's a pansy.
I guess.
On the other hand, the fighters really should be embarrassed. If there's any group of people on the planet you could probably throw, like, something through and they should be able to take it, it's professional cage fighters.
Right, like, you would think.
Like, I guess it's actually maybe, like, a Navy SEAL or something like that. You're big, tough guys, and, what, some loud noise and a little blood scared you? Probably not in the right profession there, pals.
In the main event of UFC 223, we had Khabib Nurmagomedov defeating Al Iaquinta at 155.2-pound catchweight fight by unanimous decision, 50-44, 50-43, and 50-43. Khabib got takedowns in the first couple rounds pretty easily, kind of dominated those rounds. I think those were the ones scored 10-8. Then in, like, the third, fourth, and fifth, he had trouble getting takedowns. He couldn't really get Iaquinta down, but he just kept landing this jab over and over and over. And you would have thought maybe, like, Iaquinta could catch Khabib and do some damage on the feet, but Iaquinta could get nothing going, and Khabib didn't look, like, great on the feet, but he had that jab, and it was enough to bloody up Iaquinta, and I think it was, like, 200 strikes to 18. Like, he won the fight clearly, but to me, it's like, you would have liked to see Khabib get a finish here on short notice, but it wasn't meant to be, I guess.
I mean, look, all due credit to the guy. Al Iaquinta was literally his fifth opponent that week.
True.
Like, okay, and there is something mental about that, and, like, you're not prepared. It's a little different, but I kind of watched this, and my impression was that Khabib fought like a guy who had never been 5 rounds before and didn't want to take a chance at gassing. Because those first 2 rounds, he was getting takedowns easy. He was destroying him on the ground. He was doing what he does, where it looks awful and exhausting. And then the third and fourth rounds, he went to this jabbing deal. In the fifth round, he got it down again at one point and did a little bit more damage. I think he kind of, like, especially early in the fifth round, he came out almost like he was like, "This is kind of embarrassing that this fight's still going on. I'm going to really try to finish this shit." And he fought with a little more energy in the fifth. So I'm thinking maybe he just was taking it easy. And plus, he really had nothing to gain at this point. So he went out there and he won. Sure, I would have liked to see him look a little more impressive, but he did just... Look, Al Iaquinta's a very good fighter. He's already been, like, a top 10 level talent.
Absolutely.
And there was not a moment in the fight where I thought that he had the slightest chance of winning. And I don't know if it's been like that for anybody since, like, the days of Anderson Silva and, like, BJ Penn at their peaks. You're just like, oh yeah, like, they're not just winning fights, they're winning every moment of fights, and you're never convinced that somebody's their equal. It's a scary dude.
After the fight, Khabib challenged George St. Pierre, of all guys. He didn't mention, I don't think he mentioned Ferguson, and I don't think he mentioned Conor. He said he wanted GSP next. GSP most recently fought at 185 pounds and had diarrhea. So I don't know where they go next with Khabib, because, I mean, obviously the Conor fight's huge, but I think from a public relations standpoint, I mean, the UFC, it has to give him some sort of slap on the wrist. He can't come back for the July show. And Khabib also has Ramadan, which is always an issue every summer. He doesn't like to train then. And then you've also...
No, they're not going to do it until... They won't do it until, I would imagine, later in the year.
Well, it's a screwed-up
situation.
November,
December. Yeah.
As far as the lightweight title goes, it's a mess, because Khabib won. He was supposed to fight Ferguson for the interim title. Then he was going to fight Holloway for the real title, and they were going to strip Ferguson of the interim title and make Ferguson the number one contender. But they never officially stripped Conor. They said, Dana always said, once the first punch was thrown in the Ferguson-Khabib fight, then Conor would be stripped, but they've never actually fought. And Khabib beat a guy who weighed in at 155.2 pounds and wasn't in the title hunt anyway. So I guess technically Khabib is their lightweight champion, but you still have Ferguson and Conor with claims to that title, and neither of them can fight. Neither of these three guys can fight in the next 6 months anyways.
No, it's great. They now have three champions, and they at least they're all champions. It could have had, like, two and a half if Chiesa had somehow won. But, again, it's all irrelevant because, like, I think Dana said that Tony is stripped of his title, and I think he didn't say Conor stripped because I don't think he wants to say those words because, again, Conor's very Trumpian. Just, you can do things, just can't say them in a certain way. You can't challenge him too much. But what's the difference? It's not like it's pro wrestling or anything like that. Like, Khabib's next fight is most likely Conor McGregor. So, and Conor, for sure, his next fight will be for a title. I don't care if Khabib is a champion and he defends it three times in the next 4 months, and then Conor comes back and he fights Michael Chiesa, or he fights Al Iaquinta or somebody like that. Conor will be fighting for a world title. It's just going to happen. He will probably fight for a title for the rest of his life. They're just going to do it. They're going to boxing him, which is fine, whatever. But for right now, it's legitimate, and his next fight's going to be for the world title, so he's going to carry around his belt. They're not going to, like, physically take the belt back, and, like, there's no ceremonial stripping of the title, like, where you stand in disgrace before everybody like a cop, or they say you're not good enough to wear this badge, and they take it from you. Like, they're not going to rip the title out in the middle of the July pay-per-view before the main event. That Dane's going to get there and be like, everybody, just let you know, we are officially not recognizing Conor. He is not good enough to be our champion. Nah. He's not going to have his belt. He's going to run around and do his little fucking song and dance. And for, like, the 15th fucking month in a row, we'll have a title unification bout somehow. And meanwhile, Tony Ferguson's going to be out there, and he's going to fight somebody next, I'm sure. And then he's going to go, hey, look, I'm a champion. I should get the title. If you're interim champion, and then you strip the champion of his belt, you're automatically champion. So they would have had to strip Conor, give it to Tony, and then Tony would have had to be stripped. So I guess Tony was champion, and then they stripped him of it.
It's confusing. In the co-main event, Rose Namajunas defeated Joanna Jędrzejczyk by unanimous decision, 49-46 on all three scorecards. I scored it, I think, 48-47. I had Rose winning the first and second, Joanna winning the third and fourth, and then Rose winning the fifth. It was competitive. I just felt like Rose was a little quicker. I think Joanna, like, as far as strikes went, like, landed more in number, but Rose's were just more damaging. Like, if you looked at their faces, Rose looked pretty normal, and Joanna looked like it was one of those fights where her eye was closing up, maybe a broken orbital, that sort of thing. Rose is just a little quicker, a little younger, a little more tread on the tires, I think, and that's kind of the story of the fight.
Yeah, it was, you know, I watched it. I couldn't really, like, tell you that I scored it one way or the other, because, you know, it was a competitive fight, and neither one of them separated themselves from the other, you know, significantly or anything like that, which I think is, you know, a testament to Rose, and that's what you do. If you're winning your fights and you go out and you knock out the champion real quick, and you come back and then you beat the champion over five rounds, that's how you solidify yourself as the best. And to me, this is a big deal, because Rose, you know, she looked good before, but she, you know, the fight was so fast with Joanna, was it real? Turns out it was.
So the question is, who would be the number one contender for Rose now? Have you given that any thought?
Oh, I presume it's going to be Jessica Andrade.
Andrade.
She's going to kill her.
You think Andrade is going to kill Namajunas?
Yeah.
Yeah,
just the way she's looked lately, just because she's so big and so strong. And I still don't know how she didn't beat Joanna. I'm just a big Jessica Andrade fan.
Okay, so they could go Andrade next. She's coming off a win over Tisha Torres and Claudia Gadelha. So, yeah, that would make sense. And then there was talk Joanna might move up to 125. She could probably immediately get a shot against Nico Montana. Obviously the UFC's most famous champion. So we'll see where they both end up. Rose is young, though, and probably has another, you know, 4 or 5 good years ahead of her here. So she could get past Andrade. She could kind of, you know, solidify herself as a great champion.
If I walked by Nico Montano in a mall, I wouldn't know who she is. Hell, she could be sitting in a booth that says, "Hi, I'm Nico Montano. We want a free autograph. I'm the UFC's women's 125-pound champion." I still wouldn't know who she is. What is the point of her? Why does she exist? She's the most useless champion in the whole company. And that's saying something, given that there's like 4 men's champions in every weight class right now. And she's more useful. She's more useless than the fact that they're on their 3rd or 4th champion at middleweight and lightweight at the same year.
Hanato Moicano defeated Calvin Kattar by unanimous decision, 29-28,
30-27, 30-27. Kicked the shit out of his legs. That's all I really remember.
ZM Punk, Zabit, Magomed Sharipov defeated Kyle Bochniak by unanimous decision, 29-28, 30-27, 30-27. Awesome fight. If you didn't see this fight, you should go out of your way to see it. The story was, supposedly, before the fight even began, when he was warming up in the locker room, ZM Punk broke his hand and went into the fight with a broken hand and still looked great. Like, he's amazing at pretty much everywhere, I feel like. Granted, Bochniak's not a top 10 guy, but he's a name. He's been in the UFC for a while, and he actually looked really good. He kept moving forward. He wasn't scared. And at the end of the 3rd round, like, Bochniak was yelling at Magomed Sharipov, screaming at him, throwing punches. And they just started, like, throwing up against the cage like crazy. Awesome fight. Zabit won. He should have. He looked like the better guy. But Bochniak gave him a run there at the end for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I don't know how you break your hand warming up. Like, what
you're
crazy. Kind of pads are those?
Magomed
Sharipov, Armenia, Dagestan, I mean. Magomed Sharipov, holy hell. First of all, he's only like 23 or 24, so he's young enough, you're like, oh, he is going to be good, he's going to get even better. Is he 27? He honestly could be 45. Like, those people in that region, some of them, they have lived a life. Like, they have aged. But everything he did looked great. He put on a show. He kind of showed a little personality. Sure, you would have liked to see him finish Bochniak, but especially knowing that he had a broken hand the whole time, I'll give it to him. And Bochniak, holy hell, that dude's tougher than spit. He's tougher than grit and gravel and dead puggles. The dude just kept taking a beating, and he really didn't stop. And it's not that, you know, we see guys sometimes they get hit, and they won't go down, and they're tough, but there's a lot of pride in there. Like, Bochniak, no, he was game the whole time.
Yeah.
And I was like, how is that possible? So, I mean, hats off to that dude for being tough as shit, and he got the ultimate compliment when, on Twitter, Forrest Griffin said, "Kyle Bochniak is my new favorite fighter." I was like, that's all you need to know about what he saw there. So, thank you guys for making this show awesome.
Yeah, I mean, Bochniak was 2-2 in the UFC going into that fight. He had wins over Brandon Davis and Enrique Barzola. But you wonder if Zabit didn't have the broken hand, if it would have been more dominant. I mean, a lot of times you see guys break a hand in a fight and they're screwed. They're trying to throw an elbow with that hand and they can't land. Like, I can picture that happening to Uriah Faber a couple times. It's like, ooh, Faber would be he'd probably be winning this fight if he had broken his hand. But, anyway,
even if the hand does go numb and you can kind of use it like as a club, this is boxing. This is MMA. You need to be able to actually, like, it's not just a pain thing. You need to physically move your fingers sometimes. And if your hand's broken because your dog's got kennel cough, you can't physically grab things. I'm making like a hand grabbing motion like you'd hog boobies right now. Hey, don't die on air, dude. This would be a really awkward show. I will totally put it up, but it'd still be awkward. Are you alright? Yeah, try hearing it at 3 in the morning.
Oh, I can relate. Trust me. You should have seen the dog with the cone on its head for 3 weeks over here, scratching it every night. Like, I don't know why the outside of the cone has, it's like hard plastic, but it has ridges on it. So every time she scratches it, it's like, I don't even know what you would compare it to, but it was really annoying. That's done, though. Now she just licks her old wound. In the opener of the main card, we had Chris Grootsmacher defeating Joe Lauzon by TKO. It was a corner stoppage, which you rarely see in the world of MMA at the end of the second, between the second and third round. Lauzon looked good in the beginning, but then really just got his ass kicked and is old and should probably retire. Sorry, Joe.
Yeah, he's done.
Yeah, I feel like he's been done for a while. He was good. He was good and always had good fights, but like it's like Diego. It's like it's just time. You're old, you're slowing down, and you've been in a lot of wars. Don't do this shit anymore. Like, I can't think of anybody in the UFC Joe Lauzon should fight now. You know, it's just time to go away.
It'll just be these level fights where you're like, he's being put on there because he's a good hand. But first of all, he's fought almost everybody you can fight, especially anybody of note. Like, I was like, I don't know. He's had wars with a who's who of the sport. So just go away, Joe. Like,
yeah.
Save your brain. Your baby needs to borrow it.
He's 27 and 15 now. Like, in his last, let's see. He's 3-6 in his last nine. You know, the wins are over Gomi, Sanchez, and Marcin Held, which was a split decision. It's like, yeah, call it a day. The last two losses are to Clay Guida and Chris Grootsmacher, both by TKO. It's over.
He's got more wins than most guys on the rosters have been alive.
The prelims, I did not happen to catch the prelims. If there's anything we need to know, you'll tell us right now. Karolina Kowalkiewicz defeated Felice Herrig. Split decision.
Yeah, she looked, whatever.
Olivier Aubin-Mercier defeated Evan Dunham by TKO. 53 seconds.
This was awful. He hit him with several knees right to the liver, and poor Evan Dunham had just, it's still to me one of the saddest and scariest things in the world is to watch cage fighters go down with pain. It's like, oh boy, that must really hurt.
Yeah, Evan Dunham was always a guy who I felt like didn't get a lot of credit, but he's 36 now, too, and has been in the UFC for 9 years. You know what I mean? Like it's sneaking up on both of us, I think, now, where it's like, you think Evan Dunham, oh, yeah, he's good, but it's like, you know, he might have a couple more good, decent fights in him, but he's not moving up the ladder, I don't think, here. Ashley Evans-Smith defeated Beck Rollins by 30-27 on all three scorecards. And Devin Clark defeated Mike Rodriguez by unanimous decision.
I definitely don't remember this. I remember not remembering that, actually.
Bonuses went to ZM Punk and Kyle Bochniak for best fight. Performance of the night went to Chris Grootsmacher and Olivier Aubin-Mercier. And the dolly.
There you go.
Did you see Bellator on Friday night?
Henderson. I saw the main event. Yeah.
Huerta in Budapest. Benson won by guillotine at 49 seconds of the second. I'm not sure how that relates.
Because it's Bellator. I think there's some shady Jewish shit going on there. That's why they're always in Israel. This fight sucked. I don't really know even what really happened in it. Like, they were kind of going, and then in the second round, Huerta kind of came up for a single leg, then he switched it off and kind of drove Henderson against the fence, and Henderson, like, grabbed for a guillotine, and then Huerta shook it off, and Henderson just kind of put his arm around his neck like he's going to go for a guillotine, resettled himself, locked up his hand, and then just jumped to the guard with it and tacked him out real. Like, it was in slow motion. It was so like, oh, okay, there. Okay, he did it. Huh. I mean, we all saw this coming. Why didn't Huerta? But I guess he didn't see it coming.
One guy who actually looked pretty good was a guy named Adam Borix. I think he's from Hungary. He won in the semi-main event with a flying knee. It was a good finish. It was a knockout. But other than that, kind of a nondescript card. Ed Ruth won in the opener by unanimous decision. Other than that, you don't have to rush out and see this. Then the other big show of the weekend was WrestleMania 34 at the Superdome in New Orleans. That was on Sunday night, April 8th. The announced attendance was 78,133 people. I'm presuming that's a gimmick number because usually Vince likes to add another 10,000 or so people to the WrestleMania attendance figures because it's just part of the show. It makes it more enjoyable for the fans to think there's more people in the building. Sure. The big news.
I like things that are popular.
Yes, yeah. Everyone really cares about attendance. I also like how every WrestleMania they have to show all the announced teams multiple times too. Like, here's the Germans, here's the Japanese. That's always fun. In relation to MMA, we had Ronda Rousey making her WWE debut. She teamed up with Kurt Angle to defeat Triple H and Stephanie McMahon. Rousey got the armbar on Stephanie and made her tap at 20 minutes and 40 seconds of round number one.
I guess there is the first round, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What did... I had one issue with this match, and I think I wrote to you while it was going on. I did not like in the beginning where Ronda got Stephanie in the armbar, and Stephanie just stood up and got out of it and then started beating up Ronda. There was, like, no transition. Like, Triple H should have jumped in and hit Ronda or something, but it was like Stephanie was going toe-to-toe with Ronda, and Stephanie's not even a fucking wrestler in the company.
There was something there. No, Stephanie did something.
No,
I remember she did. I remember she did because I thought, hey, that was kind of like clever because it played up the whole "this is my world and the rules are different here" deal.
Yeah, it wasn't enough. I don't think whatever it was she did there. But anyway, that was my one gripe with the match. But Ronda was super over for somebody who's a beginner in pro wrestling, never had a match before with that much scrutiny and that much pressure. She looked good. She even got, like, Triple H up in a fireman's carry. That was pretty cool. Like, she looked strong. She looked in shape. She looked like she was happy to be there. And to me, it was, like, I want to say it was a feel-good story, but, you know, coming off those two losses and how bitter and, I want to say depressed, but how unhappy she was, she looked pretty happy and did a good job here.
I mean, I was blown away by her. Everything I've seen on TV of her, I thought it was going to be a disaster. I thought she had no presence about her. Honest to goodness, it was like in a real fight. As soon as she was in the ring, like, it was like a light switch flipped. And she kind of got this serious look, but it wasn't like a cartoon serious. It was like, I kind of believe this. And the way she carried herself and moved, I'm like, okay, like, I still believe that this is a badass. And her outfit looked kind of dumb, but other than that, other than the fact that, like, she looked like she was literally, like, in her underwear, like, white top, isn't that a good look there, lady? Yeah, I mean, the way she moved in the ring, I really underestimated her. What a really good athlete she is. She was smooth, she flowed well. I thought her selling looked good. It came across as believable. She seemed to have an idea of how to, like, at Mania and on Raw the next night. Like, she seemed to understand almost instinctively how to milk things, like, submissions from the crowd. Like, the way she's setting up the arm bars and, like, doing little things, like, okay, I don't know what she'll be like in the long run. It's obviously such a personality-driven business, but, she did way better than I thought she would.
Yeah, she for, you know, your first match, she did great. I think the one everyone, like, the one you could most compare her to was LT against Bam Bam Bigelow at WrestleMania 11. LT had never fought. He had never wrestled. He was coming in from football. And, like, I remember at the time, people were like, wow, that was better than I thought. I think this was way better than the LT Bigelow match, and the crowd was into it, and it's for now it's working. So good on WWE and good for Ronda. In the main event, we had Brock Lesnar defeating Roman Reigns. storyline headed into this match was Dana White saying that Brock was going to come to UFC. The idea was Brock was going to lose this match to Reigns and stop wrestling for a while. Instead, he went over and kind of, I want to say a shocker, but I was surprised. I figured Lesnar would lose and Rollins would get the win. And, you know, Vince has been trying to push Reigns as the top guy for 4 years now, trying to get him over. And Brock just really beat the shit out of him in this match. Like, a lot of German suplexes, a lot of belly-to-bellies. There's one on the floor where he dropped Reigns on his head pretty much. And I'm not sure if Reigns bladed or if it was a hard way cut, but either way, Reigns was bleeding everywhere from, like, his scalp, Crimson Mask, and you don't see that ever in WWE. They've been shying away from blood for years. And Brock got the win. The story afterwards was that Brock signed a short-term deal with WWE, but can still fight in the UFC under this deal. So he can do both if he wants, which is basically what he did the last time when he fought Mark Hunt in UFC.
It's Brock. He's always going to do what he wants to do, and nobody's going to really fight him. I think that WWE and UFC both understand that they benefit tremendously from just letting Brock be Brock. He's going to fight when he wants to, but he's not going to fight that much. He's not going to, you know, dedicate himself and be off WWE Raw for too long. And he's not on Raw that much anyways. And all that legitimacy helps him. And if you're UFC, I don't think Dana gives a shit. I think Dana sees WWE is so far removed from what he does. He doesn't care if somebody wants to do it. It's like, if you don't want to fight, Dana White's got a thousand things. He's got dollies flying through windows. He doesn't give a shit. He's not going to, like, beg people to fight. He just doesn't care.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on the guy, too. If it's somebody who's a big draw and can make him a lot of money, he'll let him do it. But if it's a mid-carder who wants to go wrestle in WWE, he'd probably say no because he's afraid whatever, they'll get hurt or something. It's just not worth it. And he doesn't want to set a precedent, but if it's a guy who came from WWE to begin with, who's going to do, you know, at least 1 million buys on his next show, it's worth the risk.
I also think that it's because, like, Dana, I think, looks at it as, this is basically Brock as a pro wrestler, if you will, doing MMA every once in a while, as opposed to a UFC guy who thinks, hey, I want to go do, you know, I want to go wrestle in the Goodwill Games. I really want to do this. So this is gonna not quite the same. But I think if anybody in the UFC roster basically said I'm done with this, I just want to be a pro wrestler, I don't think they'd stop almost anyone. I know they wouldn't. You know why? They didn't stop Ronda. Like, if they're not gonna stop Ronda from being in WWE, who are they gonna possibly stop? They're not gonna. They don't care.
What else? Any other thoughts on Mania? Daniel Bryan returned. Shane McMahon. What are your thoughts on Shane McMahon?
Shane McMahon is so pathetic. The whole show, like, it was really weird. On the one hand, I enjoyed the show because, like, every match, like, I kind of. Like, the matches for the most part were pretty simple. A lot of the characters, you didn't, like, have to, I didn't get the impression you had to really follow things intensely to figure out what was going on. Like, as a very, very casual fan, I could kind of like, oh, okay, this is what's going on here, I know this person, and so on. So from that perspective, it was good. On the other hand, I'm 35, and I haven't watched pro wrestling on like even a semi-regular basis in like a decade. Yeah, the fact that I can still know what's going on and I know everybody and that, like, most of the matches is something appeal to me, I don't think that's a good thing. Because a lot of those dudes, like Triple H and Kurt Angle, looked so bad in there. Because they looked like two big roided up dudes who are just slow and don't understand that they're just not there anymore. They're like a different generation. They got all these young athletic guys doing all this stuff, and they got these two guys, like, especially Kurt, was just like, oh, you're not athletic right now, that sucks. And but otherwise, I guess I didn't have anything crazy really happen on the show. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there wasn't like some big ladder. Oh yeah, there was, wasn't there? Yeah, oh yeah, there was that ladder match.
That was fucking brutal.
The ladder match, I think, was the night before on NXT.
Oh, shit, it was the night before. Yeah, never mind, I was right. Oh, yeah, there was nothing crazy then on the show. Like, no real violence, no big, like, there weren't, like, a lot of surprises or anything like that. Just kind of there.
About Nicholas winning the tag team titles with Braun Strowman.
I loved that. I thought it was so cool. I mean, I know there's going to be somebody that doesn't like it, but when it happened, I'm like, the way they hype everything is like, have your WrestleMania moment. That was the thing I'm like, oh yeah, that's going to be something that they're going to play in every montage forever. It's going to be like when Shawn, like they always had that shot of Shawn Michaels jumping off the ladder, Splash and Razor Ramon, and shit like that, and Hogan slamming Andre. They're going to have this kid coming out of the audience and tagging in and being and winning the tag team titles with big goofy Braun, and I liked it. It was like, I hate saying like it was a moment, but it was. It was like it was a moment, and I give them credit for it. It's kind of like, huh, okay, you like a serious booker wouldn't do something like that, but it's WrestleMania. I tune in to see weird things like that happen. Like I kind of want to see that, so right. I liked it.
I liked it too. It's pretty much the only show I watch every year. I'll catch stuff here and there. If I hear something's really bad or really good on Raw, I'll watch it. Or maybe a little like New Japan stuff if something's supposed to be, you know, six stars or something. But other than that, I watch very, very little wrestling. Moving along, we should probably talk about Mr. Floyd Mayweather. There's rumors that Dana White says are unfounded that Floyd Mayweather versus Conor McGregor 2 will happen in the octagon with modified rules. Have you seen these reported modified rules?
No, but I could only imagine how intelligent and not at all bullshit they are.
Let's start here. I do not believe this is going to happen. I don't like talking about it. I also said that before Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather were supposed to box. So we should touch on this because you never know in 2018. Some guy from, I think, Abu Dhabi or somewhere like that reported this. Omar Al-Rassi, who is verified on Twitter, wrote, Floyd Mayweather will fight Conor McGregor in the octagon with 4-ounce gloves, no shoes, 5 5-minute rounds in the 155-pound division. No kicks, no takedowns, no elbows, no knees. Certain things will be allowed, like the clinch. It's going to be co-promoted by Mayweather Promotions, UFC, and McGregor Entertainment. And he wrote, last time I said McGregor will be a co-promoter, nobody believed me. But again, this is the fight game. Sources say things, but it changes very quickly. And Dana said there's no truth to any of this, but it did get a lot of play. It was even written about in Forbes.
That doesn't mean anything. The Forbes thing's a scam.
I understand, but I'm just reporting the facts.
This is such a lie. And it's a real easy one to spot, too, because it comes across as such fantasy booker bullshit. Like, what kind of rule set could we come up with that Floyd might agree to? Well, it would have to be in a cage, and it basically would be a boxing match in a cage, but we'll allow a little bit of clinch fighting. That way, you see, then Conor's got a chance. Like, otherwise, it's just a boxing match. No takedowns, no kicks, no elbows. That's a boxing match.
In the cage.
Yeah, I guess. Like, okay. Like, you're just going to do essentially some crappy bare-knuckle boxing? No. They're either going to do it or they're not. Because once you get complicated like that, I think you lose people. I don't think people would ever tune in because it'd be like, it seems like you're fixing the fight. And when you get too many weird rules, like people go, look, you're going to box, you're going to box. You're going to cage fight, you're going to cage fight. Don't invent something. You might as well just have them see who has the most home runs in a home run derby or something like that while you're at it. Just come up with weird athletic shit they could do that has nothing to really do with what they do for a living.
Another Mayweather-McGregor note. I think we talked about this a couple months ago, but there was a class action lawsuit against the pay-per-view providers because of the shoddy pay-per-view stream. Some people lost the fight in the middle of it. Some people didn't see it at all, so they spent $100 on this fight. And then there was a class action lawsuit because a lot of people didn't get to see the fight. Supposedly a lot of systems were overloaded. This thing did 4 million buys, yada, yada, yada. But I guess the courts recently approved refunds congruent to time lost during the broadcast, meaning the less you saw, the more money you'll get back. The breakdown is as follows. Viewers who missed over 5 minutes get a full refund of the $99.99 pay-per-view price. Viewers who missed some but less than 5 minutes get $50. Viewers who missed only prelim bouts get $25 refunds. And viewers who bought food, drinks for interrupted viewing parties can choose between a $5 refund or 3 months of complimentary access to UFC Fight Pass. The settlement is expected to be finalized on June 20th.
That's a weird one. Like, seriously, like, I tip my hat to the lawyer that thought to ask for the compensation for the wasted Doritos. That was a good thought. I probably wouldn't have gone that far. I would have thought that's really stupid, but damn it, now there's going to be Dorito law in Nevada.
I had striped bass at my Mayweather-McGregor party.
You had fish at a party?
Yeah, it was weird. I had a friend come over from the restaurant. He made a whole bunch of crap. Weird rice, too. Forbidden rice. It's really weird.
The fuck is forbidden rice?
It's like really dark. It's like almost purple. It was weird.
Say no more. I understand. Darker the rice, the more forbidden it is. I get it. Been there.
What's the darker the berry, sweeter the juice, to quote?
Yeah, damn right.
Tupac. Yeah.
I don't think Tupac came up with that.
It was in one of his songs. He used that line.
Doesn't mean he came up with it.
Okay, I apologize. I will later check the origins of that.
Rappers aren't exactly, they're kind of famous for stealing shit. I'm going to look that up right now. I feel really dumb for this. Him. Darker the... Ow. Bear.
Floyd Mayweather Jr.'s bodyguard got shot.
That's what a bodyguard's for.
Getting shot.
Yeah, they're there so you don't get hit by something. Like, they're literally there to guard your body. Someone tries to shoot you, you get, that's what they do. I should have just stopped with the jokes initially, yeah.
So, Darker, the first thing that comes up is Tupac.
And yeah,
Urban Dictionary.
Too. Yeah. Is it on, I didn't see him reference an Urban Dictionary.
What did you type in?
I had darker the berry, sweeter the juice.
Yeah, the sweeter the juice. You got Urban Dictionary. Something from
even
Friday.
Tupac says, Tupac's fucking lyric is, some say the blacker the berry, the sweeter the juice. I say the darker the flesh, then the deeper the roots. Anyways.
That's a good line.
Yeah, that is pretty good. It's a really racist line. But
how dare you?
Good. Some say, therefore... He's not even taking it from stuff. Like, nobody would, like, come up with something that awesome and then just attribute it to Anonymous.
I don't know where it began. Anyway, so Floyd's bodyguard got shot early Monday as a group of three cars that included the boxing great was traveling to a hotel in Atlanta, according to the Atlanta Police Department. The APD said in a news release that police believe Mayweather was with the vehicles, but that he was not in the car that was shot at and was not injured. Investigators said they were looking to confirm that the shooter was targeting the vehicle. At this time, it appears that this was not a random shooting and the shooter was targeting the victim's vehicle. The bodyguard, Gregory LaRosa, was treated at an Atlanta hospital for a leg wound and later released. So I don't know if people are trying to shoot Floyd Mayweather or what was going on, but not only is Conor McGregor getting into trouble, it doesn't seem like Floyd is the brightest bulb here.
I might be stepping out of turn here, but
weird.
I'm beginning to get the impression that these professional fighters are not exactly stable people who make good life choices. This seems like that's going around lately.
It is an odd career choice, career path.
Like, how does this... I know that these people all get involved in weird shit or whatever, but honestly, how could you be as great as Floyd Mayweather is at fighting? An endeavor which he's undeniably a master at his craft. He clearly works out. You know, he keeps in shape, he trains himself, all this stuff. How does he have the time to somehow get mixed up where people in Atlanta want to shoot him? Why is he even in Atlanta? Why has he ever been to Atlanta? Why would you go to Atlanta if you didn't have to go to Atlanta? It's a shithole. It's Atlanta. Nobody likes Atlanta. You live in Las Vegas. Go to stay in your city, a city where they have proven that you are actually above the law. Don't leave. Just stay there.
Another master of his craft is back in the news. John Jones managed to make, I shouldn't say a lot of press, but he got into a Twitter beef with former UFC fighter Tyson Griffin, of all people. Really weird. Apparently they have disliked each other for a long time. Griffin commented on the McGregor bus situation. He wrote on Twitter, "Well, there goes Conor McGregor losing his Burger King deal faster than John Jones lost his Nike deal. Or did he? More money, more problems." And then Jones, who we know is ineligible to fight now because he failed another drug test, wrote, "Tyson Griffin, my dream was to be sponsored by Nike as a high school wrestler. Became an adult and made it happen. Even had my own sneaker, which sold out within a day. Whatever happened with your Nike deal? I don't remember. I'll wait."
That's a good line.
Jones wrote, "Griffin, you can tell by the tone of your tweet that you're happy Conor may be losing his deal. Disguise yourself as an MMA coach or an MMA personality. I just see a bitter bitch who's the size of my dick." Jones went on, "The last part was more for me. Just proud of myself. Thought it flowed nicely."
Trumpian, man. That's the same world that lives in where a president goes, "You shouldn't have done that. We're getting some missiles coming at you, and they're really smart missiles, and they're brand new." Like, what? What? So yeah, John Jones is a great human being. He never deviates from character. He's always John Jones. Through and through, he will never change. That's why I think he should be allowed to fight. He's not going to change. At a certain point, you just have to accept people for who they are. That's who John Jones is. He's an asshole. If everything he says, it's great because it's all true, basically. When he says things to the Tyson Griffin, like, he's basically saying, "Who are you? You're a small little midget." And compared to John Jones, Tyson Griffin's a nobody. He is right. A tiny little man. In the world that they occupy, being able to beat somebody's ass is the only thing that matters. And John Jones can beat everybody in the world's ass. And he's way wealthier. And he can back it up. It's amazing. That's what I love about John Jones. He just says horrible, dumb shit. But he's not a bully. Because he does it still. It's like Khabib. He just says, like, he just speaks the truth. And we're all kind of caught off guard. Like, dude, you couldn't be a little nice? He's like, "I don't have to be nice. I'm worth millions of dollars, and I can beat your ass, you little midget. Shut up." He's right. So, who is Tyson Griffin to take a shot at John Jones? Huh? Who are you, Tyson?
4 days later, like it seemed like it was over, Griffin went back on Twitter and wrote, "I may have taken a jab at Conor McGregor during his rampage, but just like that man tried to steal the spotlight, John Jones is trying to make this all about him, and apparently it's too soon to joke about his Nike deal. 2 years ago, I kept this private because I almost felt bad for John Jones, but now I'll let you all judge for yourselves." So attached to that tweet, he puts a picture of, like, direct messages they had going back and forth on Twitter from 2 years ago. And
awesome.
In one of them, John Jones wrote to Griffin, "Tyson, I'm sitting on about $8 million cash. I have $2 million in real estate. I won the UFC belt 9 times. I'm internationally famous. I'm 6'4". You, on the other hand, I'm guessing are 5 feet flat. I'm guessing with a net worth of $100,000. Never won any titles. Can walk around without anyone giving a fuck who you are or what you do. My point is, you and I, as UFC athletes, are not even close to being on the same level.
I love it. He's just burying him. This is how Kevin Nash worked in WCW. Just looked at people and be like, look, you're just smaller than me. We all know I'm having sex with more women than you are, and that's the only reason any of us are in this business, bitch.
You're like a boy compared to someone like me. I'm actually questioning myself as I'm writing this, thinking, why am I even giving you the time of day? Every time I turn around, you are writing me some bullshit. Why do you try so hard to get my attention? And Griffin wrote back a more measured response that we don't really have to read. But John Jones is just a dick, is the bottom line.
He's an alpha dick. But you know what, man? You could do it if you're him, I guess.
And then Griffin went on, thanks for the hate, also known as love, John Jones. We are all one, my brother. Just keep trying to be a better role model and focus on being a great champion. No one is perfect, but winning and money isn't everything. You have taught me that. Then Jones wrote back, it's hilarious that you reposted our private messages. I meant every word I said. At first I thought your hatred was Daniel Cormier related, but now I'm starting to think you are just an envious little bastard. At the end of the day, I'm not going to lie, it's pretty fun shitting on you. Just because I'm a bigger man doesn't mean I have to sit back, be quiet, and listen to your cyber attack. Hope this has gained you a few more followers. I'm sure you will reply to my last message, be quiet for a while, and come out with more hatred in a few more months. It's your pattern. You're cute, my little pet. Kissy face emoji. Last thing, don't call me brother. My brothers are over 6 feet tall and champions. Hitting me with that soft shit after getting verbally body bagged. Stop throwing tomatoes from the sidelines, bro. You're whack.
He's right. From his perspective, I can see where you'd be like, whenever somebody posts like the PMs, you're just like, yeah, that's a real cool move. And then he just goes, by the way, I meant all of that. I'm not running from it. You think you're embarrassing me? I think it's fun shitting on you. Who does that? I'll tell you who does that. John Jones does that. That's why John Jones is a great man. Such an asshole.
Another guy who you think is an asshole is Ben Rothwell. He's accepted a 2-year USADA sanction for a failed drug test. The 36-year-old heavyweight accepted the sanction for a failed out-of-competition drug test taken back on – actually, two failed tests on February 6th and February 15th. Rothwell tested positive for an anabolic androgenic steroid of exogenous origin, according to the release. Rothwell explained – exogenous. Very hard for me to speak. Rothwell explained that the test results were due to his physician prescribing him testosterone, but the USADA determined that did not meet the criteria to obtain a therapeutic use exemption. He will be eligible to compete again in February of 2019.
He's probably telling the truth as far as like not knowing it was wrong to do, because he's such a moron. Otherwise, like you have to be about as dumb as a pile of bricks that have been covered in burnt feces. Because, seriously, you think the excuse would just be, well, my doctor said I could. Duh, you moron. That's been the biggest problem in the sport. Doctors keep saying it's okay. So that's why we got rid of all this stuff, you hacky dumb shit. However, interesting to note that the other week, Josh Barnett successfully beat these type of charges.
Yeah,
and
it was kind
of The last time the big dumb Ben Rothwell, who Affliction once gave $250,000 for one fight, last time he failed for steroids, it was in Wisconsin when he fought Josh Barnett. No, he didn't. It was Brandon Vera, wasn't it?
Was Brandon Vera.
Damn it. Either way, he's already had this happen to him once before, and that one got nothing happened because like the commission said, well, you did a bad thing, but we're not going to punish you, and that was it. And they just dropped it. Then the UFC punished him. But big fat cheater.
Speaking of big fat cheaters, you had mentioned Josh Barnett.
He's probably such a nice guy. And I'm such an asshole. But just look at him. $250,000. You couldn't run. Come on.
I like that that choke he does. You know the one he got on Mitrione?
Yeah.
But he had a name for that. It was weird.
The 10-finger guillotine choke thingy.
Yeah. So Barnett, I think we talked about him last week or 2 weeks ago. Barnett went through arbitration for his USADA violation, and they basically just gave him a verbal warning or something. So he lost like a year or two of his career while he was fighting this case, and it was due to a tainted supplement. Turns out Barnett is now going to sue the supplement company. On Monday, he filed a lawsuit in Los Angeles Superior Court against Gencor, G-E-N-K-O-R, on grounds of negligence, breach of implied and express warranty, and strict product liability. Gencor, based in L.A., makes the tributestin supplement Barnett took that was found by USADA to contain the banned anabolic agent Osterine. Barnett claims the supplement company poisoned him with Osterine and cost him fight purses, attorney fees from his case with UFC anti-doping partner USADA, reputational harm, and physical and emotional distress as the result of the contaminated supplement.
I think I talked about this once. Not like this specifically, but I remember the words coming out of my mouth. I can't remember to whom, because I have a drinking problem. But about the idea of people are being poisoned. If these things really are being purposely tainted, that's a big deal. So I think Josh Barnett will actually win this lawsuit. I don't think he should. I think that if I was a lawyer, it'd be easy to, especially the strict liability there. It's like, you guys sold me, you were going to sell me something that didn't have, you know, illegal drugs in it, and you did. So, pay up. But, he knew what he's doing. He took that shit. I don't think that you take, you know, Ginkgo Biloba, GNC, IcoPro, just on accident, like you just picked up at the store. Like, no, somebody talks it. Hey, this one really works. He's like, oh, really? Good. I'll take it.
In the suit, Barnett claims he started taking tributestin supplement in fall 2016 with the expectation that it contained Tribulus terrestris, a legal herb purported to boost natural testosterone. On December 9th, 2016, he submitted a urine sample to USADA that came back positive for Osterine. As a result, he was taken out of the running for a fight in September 2017 that would have paid him $275,000. And obviously he couldn't fight. That was in December of 16. He didn't fight at all in 17. He could have fought twice in 17, too. He's lost maybe once in 18, even. He's lost at least 3 or 4 paydays, in theory, if he had managed to win and not get cut.
Oh, yeah, he's got a case. Yeah. This is one of those things where, like, if I was a judge, I would have to recuse myself because, again, I just don't feel any sympathy for him because I know how the game works. It's just like, now you took something called tributestin or whatever. You really, if you thought that was going to work and it wasn't cheating, then you deserve to lose your money. Like, honest to goodness, that's the thing with all these supplements. If they really, really work, they ain't going to let you have it for free. They're going to make you get it through a prescription. This is how the world works these days. But once upon a time, that wasn't how it worked. Once upon a time, they made aspirin, and they said, here, try it. And people are like, oh, this is great. Wouldn't get aspirin through these days. Oh, no, you couldn't put a drug on the market. And they said, hey, what do you use it for? You go, I don't know, all kinds of shit. You can't do that. You can't just sell the, it works in a lot of things pill. Just take one every day. Why? Just because it'll make things better. And yet, that's what aspirin is. You couldn't bring that out now today. Just like, you should tell me if there's a real supplement that actually made people stronger, improved their physique, made them more muscular than ever. You're telling me this is going to be sold under some dipshit name at the GNC in the mall? Really? All the medical community missed it. But a bunch of jackasses from, like, L.A. who probably just rented a warehouse and were throwing shit in a batch of a bucket, they figured out the magical code here. Yeah. Let me know when they figure out the cure for baldness, too, you moron. It's like a gas station dick pill. You take a gas station dick pill, you deserve every single thing that comes to you as a result of taking that pill.
In the other USADA news, Nick Diaz appears to be back. On Monday, USADA announced that Diaz has accepted a one-year sanction for a whereabouts violation dating back to April 2017. 34-year-old UFC welterweight failed to make himself available for out-of-competition testing on three occasions, ranging from 2016 to 2017. According to the release, the accumulation of three whereabouts failures within a 12-month period constitutes an anti-doping policy violation. Despite USADA saying that Diaz remained in the testing pool, he was not tested for the remainder of 2017. In the first quarter of 2018, he was tested for the first time since the third quarter of 2016.
Yeah, this is an inevitability. Thankfully, cooler heads prevailed. Eventually. You know the last time that Nick Diaz won a fight was during President Obama's first term.
I believe it. I'm also laughing at your dog.
Yeah. Don't die over there, buddy. It's going to make it real awkward.
What is the dog on? Like pills? What do you give it for kennel cough?
Yeah, he's got two antibiotics, and he's actually due a, he gets, they gave him dope. He's got, hydrocodone.
Huh.
For the cough and everything. So I'm hoping he gets over this quick and I can have the remaining pills, yeah.
That sounds smart. Yeah. So it's good to take your dog's pills. So I guess technically he can return to action on, of all days, April 20th, 4:20, which is
they had
amazing.
To have done that on purpose. They had to have done that on purpose.
It's unbelievable. The irony and everything is unbelievable. Do you think Nick has any intention of fighting again?
Yes.
Okay.
There's no way they're doing this if he's not fighting again.
Who would you like to see him fight?
Oh, so many people would be great. Anybody, really?
Give me three.
Okay, at 170 pounds, Colby Covington,
you don't think Covington just takes him down and beats him up?
I want to see if he can avoid the submissions, and I want to see how Nick reacts to all that trash talk.
Okay.
Colby Covington, then, I mean, Tyron Woodley would be fine. They already tried the Carlos Condit fight, that's just never going to work. Donald Cerrone. For sure he has to fight Donald Cerrone. And then, it depends. You could throw in, like, a Darren Till or somebody like that, but I want to see him in weird shit. I want to see Nick kind of fight in semi-freak show fights.
Would you run GSP back?
Yeah, if GSP's up for it, sure, yeah.
I think GSP would take that fight. The other one I'm thinking at 185, Bisbing.
Yeah, that would be a good fight. That would be a good retirement fight for Bisbing.
Yeah, and I think it might be a winnable fight for Diaz. I think Nick is old, and like you said, he hasn't won a fight since where any of my kids...
2011.
Okay, so one of my kids was alive, so that's pretty good.
Barely.
My daughter was two. Bisping would be good. I think it'd probably be a winnable fight for Nick, and they could hype it and build it well, and it could be like a co-main of a pay-per-view and really bolster a card and bring it up a level, I would think.
Honestly, the only real problem with that fight is that Bisping wants his last fight to be in London, and yeah. I'm not really sure if Nick Diaz is allowed to travel out of the country or not. I'm not sure how that stuff works.
Me neither. He doesn't look like he's been training all that hard. If you watch any of his Instagram or Snapchat or whatever, it's like every night he's in some club in Vegas. Every night. It's kind of amusing for a guy who's, what, like, is he 36 now? How old is Nick? Is 34 now.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I have a feeling that Nick is still training. He's just one of those guys, like, he doesn't look like he's really fat or anything, so...
I'm with you. I'm just saying, he doesn't... He's out a lot. Well, I'll put it that way.
He's got a fight now. He's got no money.
Maybe. That could be... Definitely be the case. I would like to see Nick and Nate on the same card. I think that would do really well on pay-per-view. Obviously, even against each other, that would be awesome. But just in their own fights on one card, I think they could do, you know, over 300,000 buys easy with the two of them coming back on the same card against even scrubs, really. I think they both have the same. Okay.
I got an idea, and I don't know if Nick would do it. He'd be the only cog in this machine here. You do a main event of Connor versus Nate. A semi-main event is Nick versus Gunnar Nelson.
Okay.
Like, first of all, Nick and Gunnar would actually could be a really entertaining fight. And it's probably what Nick's level. I don't see Nick is really accepting that fight. But you got the kind of the Diaz versus Connor thing. Connor seems to get involved with gangs, doesn't he? He's always going up against like entire crews of people.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. Oh, you know what? We didn't mention Nate talking shit about Ferguson missing what pulling out of the fight. Nate had some good lines too, where he's like, "These guys can't even go to war," and Nate's still chirping. He's still keeping his name out there, which makes you wonder why is he doing it? You know.
It's a DS, brother. They don't always have reasons.
Yeah, I think they're a little more calculated than we realize. Considering their records the last half decade and the money they've made, they're smarter than I think we give them credit for. 8 years ago this week, legendary show.
Let's see, 8 years ago when the dog was two and he was hacking like this. 2010. What years? What month? April of 2010. Let's see. I was finishing law school. Yeah, I was graduating from law school just then. Let's see here. 2010. What the fuck was going on then? Okay. Brock was champion at this time. Because he's going to fight in July of 2010. So April was before then. What was going in the lead up to that? Let's see. I know there was Frank Mir and Shane Carwin. But I think that was March of 2010 in Atlantic City. So I don't recall off the top of my head if my dog looks at me and hacks. He sounds like a goose. Yeah, I got nothing. Hello?
Hey, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, okay, now I can hear you.
Yes, good. It was UFC 112, Invincible. Does that ring a bell?
Was this Shogun and Chuck?
No, this was Anderson Silva versus Damian Maia.
The Abu Dhabi show.
Frankie Edgar.
Oh, the fight. That was one of the weirdest fights because I scored that fight for Penn, and I know a lot of people did. And honestly, if that fight had gone to Penn, and it easily could have, there's no way they would run it back for a rematch. All of history could have been different. Yeah, because
Trump
wouldn't be
president.
He could have gotten so enthralled by BJ Penn winning. Because, you know, remember Frankie's next fight was, next opponent was Gray Maynard, and that was the kind of fight that BJ easily could have won. So right. BJ could have won a couple more fights after that. But instead, we went on to the reign of Frankie Edgar, which, yeah, it's fine.
And the demise of BJ Penn.
Yeah.
Because after that, it dropped off rapidly. This is an interview with Ariel Helwani and Dana White immediately after this show, just to refresh our collective memories.
Ariel Helwani, post-fight at UFC 112. Dana, you said a lot of big words today, embarrassed, disgrace. Is this your lowest moment as president of UFC?
No doubt about it, absolutely, 100%. This was a big event for us tonight. This was a really big moment. I was really excited. I've been here. I've been fired up. I've been on the road a lot, and this whole last, 3 weeks of my life was leading to this night here. The people in this country, including the media, have really got behind this thing and with support like I've never, ever seen anywhere. You know, I'm really embarrassed.
It almost feels like a broken record now. UFC 90, UFC 97, now this. Do you feel as though Anderson, when he fights at 185, continues to let you down?
I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. Yeah, maybe, I don't know. He's waiting for me. I just sent them to my trailer, so.
For you to talk to him?
So we'll find out.
I know that's a private conversation, but what will you say to him? If you can share with us, what are some of the things?
It's a private conversation.
Is it true?
Even back then, Dana hates Helwani. It's awesome. Like, what are you going to say to him in this private conversation? Dana smirks and goes, it's a private conversation.
It's
so good.
It's so...
I know we shit on Helwani all the time because he got paid by UFC, but, like, to a degree, like, he'll go there where these other schmucks won't even bother. Like, they'd be afraid to even ask Dana because they don't want to piss him off. Yeah, Helwani, I don't want to say he's got some balls, but he'll push more than most people will.
I just think it's funny listening to that and thinking, yeah, boy, you think this is the lowest night in UFC history. Just wait until you have an entire pay-per-view almost get canceled because one of your fighters throws a chair through a window. Like,
or wait,
you think that shit's crazy?
Or wait until you actually have to cancel an entire pay-per-view the week of because Jon Jones won't fight Chael Sonnen.
Yeah. I mean,
it got much worse. Yeah. It got much worse. But yeah. If you remember that fight with, sorry.
Oh, I remember that. I remember that show, and it was. I like it because it was an outdoor show, and I love outdoor shows.
Yep.
They never have them anymore. That was also early in like the new deal they had, and that was kind of like that was important because they had all that oil money coming in. And I think so. That was like one of those big, super embarrassing. Oh no, these guys gave us like $100 million, and we gave them a shitty show and all that. Shows how WWE is doing the same thing. They're running a show in Saudi Arabia, the greatest Royal Rumble, and they're putting, like, Undertaker's going to be on there, like, all kinds. It's like a huge deal, and it's going to be on the network. Man, oil guys who have, like, you know, fantasy booker money, they're crazy, man. People don't want to let them down.
Oh, money talks. So we had Anderson Silva defeating Damian Maia in a really weird fight where Anderson was just talking a lot of trash. Maia would go for takedowns, could get nowhere close to Silva. And Silva would, like, throw punches here or there, but clearly wasn't trying and didn't respect Maia at all. I don't know if it was, like, a beef they had from Brazil back in the day or what, but Silva...
It wasn't.
Would not give him the time of day at all.
Silva did the same thing in the Cote fight a little bit. He definitely did the same thing in the Talos Leitas fight. He was in that weird period of his life. Like an artist, you know? You have your blue period, your cube period. Silva was in I'm not going to fight inside of a cage period.
Then we had Frankie Edgar, like you said. He won the lightweight title over BJ Penn by unanimous decision. Matt Hughes defeated Renzo Gracie, who they dusted off and cut out for the show, by TKO, leg kicks and punches.
That was literally fantasy booking because Renzo was an instructor for like the king of Abu Dhabi or whatever, like the guy who's basically, I think, was responsible for all this. So it was really like, hey, I want to see my buddy fight. And they said, okay, we'll do it.
And then we had Rafael Dos Anjos defeating Terry Etim by submission and armbar. Obviously, RDA is in the mix now, you know, shit, 8 years later for a shot at the welterweight title. He's going up against Colby Covington. And then Terry Etim, we remember for taking a spin kick to the head. And then I think he's also the guy who headbutted the bus.
He fought a bus. He was the inspiration for Conor McGregor.
In the opener, Mark Munoz defeated Kendall Grove. On the prelims, we had Phil Davis defeating Alexander Gustafsson. Other names on there, not a lot that you would still know today. Rick Story was on the prelims, but most of these guys are out of the UFC at this point.
Good. Very few people should be fighting cage fights 8 years later. Like, whatever age you're at, you should never be getting punched in the head for a living 8 years in a row.
At that level, at this level, for sure.
Pretty much at any level, but yeah, definitely at that level.
Moving along, this weekend we've got Bellator number...
No idea. I'm not
I'm not asking anyone. I don't give a shit.
197. How dare you? We're almost at the 200th show. We should like count down. This is a big deal.
God, I hope the Bellator has their 200th show in July, so that every like July we'll have the 200th celebration of some company.
I don't think the timeline's going to work because we're only a couple shows away. I can find out. Let's see. Bellator 200. I'm going to tell you. Fuck off. It's
probably
on May,
June.
It's on May 25th in London, England, on tape delay. That'll be good. Good promoting. That is Krokop against Roy Nelson in the co-main. Underneath Rafael Carvalho versus Gegard Mousasi for the middleweight title. Anyway, this weekend, however, we've got Michael Chandler versus Brandon Gertz in the main event coming from the Family Arena in St. Charles, Missouri.
Is Gertz their champion?
No, this is a non-title fight.
Who's their champion?
The guy, remember, I can figure it out.
That's the problem. It's that guy.
No, but remember Chandler's foot was like flopping around.
Oh, I remember that. I just have no idea. I just have no idea who that guy is. That's why I thought it could be Brandon Gertz. I don't know. It's a Bellator fight.
Primus.
There we go. That's your champion of the world. It's totally on the same level as Conor McGregor. Like one company has their possible champions are Conor McGregor, Khabib Nurmagomedov. Bellator has Brent Primus. Oh yeah, you're really going to be stirring up fan interest for that one.
We've also got AJ McKee versus Justin Lawrence, Kevin Ferguson Jr., a.k.a. Baby Slice, versus Devin Brock, and Logan Storley versus Joaquin Buckley to open the show.
My guess is that Kimbo was not a very good father, so that his child probably doesn't have a lot of good life skills. And given that he's a cage fighter already, I guess he does a lot of drugs. It's going to be really weird when that kid dies in like 3 or 4 years, right after having had a fight in Bellator. Like, we're going to see how many people this company can kill.
It's like the Von Erichs or something.
Yeah, it really is.
Then on Saturday, April 14th, from the Gila River Arena in beautiful Glendale, Arizona, we have UFC on Fox, number 29, Poirier versus Gaethje. This is a fun card that's been kind of under the radar because of all the UFC 223 news and Conor.
Remember when Poirier thought he would get a title shot? Like, what the hell is he smoking? And then again, in fairness, this could be for the UFC Southwest Championship for all we know.
Well, with Conor sidelined and Khabib, it's totally up in the air, but you would think the winner of this would get one of those three at some point. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, Poirier's on a run, and I obviously, well, Eddie Alvarez is in there too, because Alvarez has the win over Gaethje. I don't know. It's a mess. Lightweight's a mess, and there's a lot of really good guys who really should deserve some bigger fights. Even guys like Felder, he got hosed without a fight. So, anyway, in the main event, we've got Poirier versus Gaethje. Should be a great fight, action fight. Gaethje likes to get punched in the face a lot, and Poirier's happy to oblige him. I don't know who I like in this fight.
Man, look, I got to tip my hat to Poirier. I tip my hat to a lot of people. If you fight Justin Gaethje, I think that dude's crazy. Especially if like you're somebody like Poirier, who's got kind of a bite-down style. Like, you know you're getting into a war. Like there's something kind of psychologically unsettling about that. To know that this dude is going to do everything, and he's good. You know, like, Gaethje's a tough guy. Like, you can't just smother him. He doesn't have some glaring weakness where you're like, hey, you know, he's crazy and tough, but if I just take him down, I'll be safe. It's like, no, he's going to be tough to take down in the clinch. He's just going to hurt you and hit you, and he's just a nasty, nasty man is what he is. I don't know if he's going to win, though. Actually, I think he will because it's 5 rounds. If a 3-round fight, I could see Poirier winning. But over 5, I think Gaethje's durability wins out.
Yeah, it's just a matter of when that durability is going to catch up with him. You know what I mean? He can only be in so many wars, and he goes to war every time and takes a lot of damage where it's like, can you just move and not get punched? Like, he'll take 3 shots to give one, and it's like, that strategy does not lend itself to lengthy careers in the UFC.
Well, he seems to take three to give one when he could take one to give one, but it's like he says to himself, now I'm going to take more just to prove to you that I can do this.
Yeah, pretty much. So you're going with Gaethje?
Yeah, my gut says Gaethje. I don't think he's finished yet. I mean, I know he just had the loss, and he did get worn down eventually by Alvarez, but I think Poirier can be... Gaethje, yeah.
I think I might be leaning towards Gaethje too, but I feel like Poirier is super underrated and doesn't get his just due. He's 22-5. Like, he doesn't lose much. And when it is, it's like Cub Swanson, Conor McGregor, Michael Johnson, and then he wins three or four fights in between all those losses. So he still doesn't have that huge win. The Pettis win was great. That fight was freaking awesome, but it was kind of a fluky finish, and Pettis isn't what he once was. So this is really going to determine, can Poirier ever get to that top, top level? In the semi-main event, we've got Carlos Condit versus Cowboy Oliveira. Matt Brown was supposed to fight Condit, but had to pull out due to a torn ACL. Condit's old and not what he used to be, and Cowboy Oliveira is the lesser of the two cowboys in the UFC.
Yeah, I bet this is kind of like the equivalent of being a woman who gets hired for a job and then realizes that they're all just looking at her because she's attractive. They don't expect anything out of her. Like, you know, like, if you're Carlos Condit, you know what they want you to do. They don't want you for your beautiful talent and your skills. They don't want you thinking you're going to be a champion or challenger. They want you to go out there and get in a brawl. And you know that, especially if they put Oliveira across you, you know, they throw Matt Brown at you, then Cowboy Oliveira. You know that that's a sign that they're telling you, we want to see you get hurt. We expect somebody to bleed. We're paying you money to shorten your life. And you got to go do it because your HVAC business isn't taking off like you thought it would.
Oliveira's coming off that loss to Yancy Medeiros, that awesome fight at UFC 218 in Detroit, which was like a match of the year contender. He lost by TKO and took a lot of shots, so we'll see if he can spring back. I would favor Oliveira in this fight, but again, it's 4 months again since the worst beating of your life, so we'll see what happens there. And another fight that you know, the hardcores are talking about, you've got Israel Adesanya versus Marvin Vettori. Adesanya is a kickboxer. I think he fought on that Australian show, yeah, in Perth, UFC 221, where he won by TKO with knees and punches. Obviously, the question is, what kind of ground game does this guy have? What's going to happen when he fights a wrestler? But he's tall, he's lanky, he can strike, and they're putting him on Fox. So I think the UFC brass sees some star potential there.
Yeah, I guess so. Vettori, if he's the guy I'm thinking of, I think he's one of those guys that like looks in really good shape and fights kind of like a karate-looking dude. But in my mind, like, there's a couple guys like, that are like the Frenchy types. Where
he's Italian, yeah.
Yeah, the same thing. They kind of... Oh, maybe... Does he have tattoos?
I don't think so. I picture him as more like clean-cut, but...
Jack. I picture him kind of like looking like Buff Bagwell.
I think he's... I'll find out.
But, Marvin, you know, just kind of like... You know, that kind of physique where you're just like, wow... Like, you look at him and go, wow, it looks like $1 million, but kind of stiff... Not as fluid, like he's not as loose as you need to be a great fighter, because he's not a wrestler. He's not a wrestler either.
Yeah. I'm thinking of a different guy. He does have a big-ass tattoo, like, on his left arm, shoulder, moving.
I'm thinking of a French
hips.
Dude. I'm pretty sure I'm thinking of a French dude. But
Inga Nu.
Yeah. Wow, that's... Oh, I love that. I just want to say big black cock a lot. I don't know why.
Yeah. What's that video with the girl when she gets her wisdom teeth out? It's my favorite, like, viral video of all time.
What does that have to do with big black cock?
They're wheeling her out, right, in a wheelchair.
Oh, never mind. I thought you were talking about one of those videos with, like, the little kids in the back seat.
I'm like,
no, those are good too. Those are good too. But this girl, she's like in college or something, but they're wheeling her out in a wheelchair and she's all drugged up from whatever the anesthesia. And she goes, she's like, I feel like I'm choking. And the mom's like, you're not choking. It's just the gauze. She goes, no, it's BBC. And like, the mom's like, what? She goes, I'm choking on a big black cock. And she's just out of it. It's like the greatest viral video ever. Like anytime, like if I'm not in a good mood, I watch that and it just turns things around for me. In the opener on Fox, we have Michelle Waterson versus Courtney Casey.
And they put the cute girl on TV.
Prelims, Tim Bosch versus Antonio Carlos Jr. I think that's Shoeface, right?
Sure. I couldn't pick him out of the lineup.
How about Wilson Hayes versus John Moraga?
That's one of those things where you go, wow, that's a really good fight. And then I realize, I don't give a shit about John Moraga. He is just one of these guys. He looks like a cholo in every way possible, just kind of this stringy, you know, Hispanic guy. Looks, I think he's former gang. He's got the tattoos. And he's just kind of small and scrawny. And I don't know, I just have no interest in him. He's a good fighter, but I just never want to see him on my TV.
The cholo from the hood. On the opener, the prelims are on Fox, by the way. The opener on Fox is Christoph Jotko versus Brad Tavares.
Yeah, I don't give a fuck about these guys. Brad Tavares is one of those, so I'm like, why is he in the UFC? Just fight. He should just be fighting David Branch every other week.
On the Fight Pass prelims, Yushin Okami returns. He last fought Ovin St. Preux in Saitama, Japan on September 23rd at 205 pounds. Guess what he's fighting in this fight at?
185?
170? 185. 170. Damn. He's back down to welterweight again for a fight with Diego Lima.
That's interesting. Diego Lima's a big dude. They went 70, I think. I might be thinking about
somebody else. He's fought at middleweight, yeah.
You got beat. First of all, you got beat by Ovin St. Preux. Then you got beat by Ovin St. Preux with the only hold that he knows. All you have to do, like, he only has one move. Just avoid one move, and you couldn't do it. So just leave. Stop fighting.
The guy he's fighting, Diego Lima, is coming off a loss to Jesse Taylor, who has since been cut from the UFC for drugs. And I think that's a pretty solid preview. We've got some non-Wikipedia people fighting on the prelims as well. In the video, she's like, I'm gagging, I'm choking. It's really good. I gotta watch that again. That should be the open to the show.
Speaking
every
of
week.
Gagging and choking, are we going to talk about Paige Van Zandt being gang raped?
I wasn't, but feel free. Or I can get it started for you and let you riff it. Sure, in her book, big story, she's going on like a book tour, and the big story from the book that everyone's focused on is she was at some party when she was 14 in high school, and she was fed a bunch of booze or something, and a bunch of guys essentially raped her at this party.
And then the school all said that she was a whore and stuff. You know, that's the part that's weird to me. Like, and I know high school kids could be monsters, but it seems really weird that a girl would get gang raped, and then the kids would be like, you were a whore. Really?
Yeah, that part seems weird, but you wonder what the actual story was if they're saying, oh yeah, we were at a party and she fucked all of us. You know what I mean? Like, how do you spin it, you know?
Yeah, it's, I don't know. All I know is that, I guess this means that she's been taking a pounding since even before she started training.
Well, a lot of times when you have like a traumatic experience like that, you stay at that age. Like,
oh, I know. Yeah,
forever.
I know. This really fucks.
And
this really fucks with
some of her behavior is like a 14-year-old girl. I'm like, huh. And like it dawned on me, like that explains some of like her like self-absorbed stuff and just seeming like a little kid. Like you always got that vibe from her that she was like kind of like younger. Even if she was 22 and in the UFC, she seemed more like she could be 17 or 16. Not just looks, but like personality and how she carried herself. And I don't know. Like to me, I saw some stuff out there where it was like, she's only doing this because of the Me Too movement, or she's just making it up for attention and to sell books. But to me, I'm like, that sounds kind of plausible, and I don't think usually people just make shit up like that for shits and giggles.
Okay, I have no idea, and there are people that... I'm sure there are girls that go out there, and they do party too much, and they really do, like, the whole regret is rape thing. I'm sure there are people that wake up in the morning and go, oh, my gosh. And it's not that they, like, not that everybody is consciously, like, lying so much as I believe people convince themselves of the reality that they want to be true. And sometimes, you know, people do, and I'm not saying with Paige here, I 14 years, I don't know what the fuck happened. I'm with you. I don't really know why people lie about it. But I do think that people will make up narratives to explain away their behavior sometimes, and they come up with lies and they kind of start to believe it, because you could be the girl that got drunk and it fucked three guys, or you could be the person that got drunk and then you go, oh, you know, I really didn't know what was going on. And look, I just wanted to make my final dumb joke. All right, this tough subject sucks. I just wanted this whole thing just to set up one dumb joke. I feel bad for her now, and I feel awful that I've been ripping on her for all these years. However, so last week when one guy after another kept pulling out, did that trigger flashbacks for her?
I got distracted. I'm not even going to go into that. A woman has died after being given formaldehyde instead of saline.
That'll do it. I think. I mean, I'm not a doctor, but I'm pretty sure that's not how you things work.
What country do you think this happened in?
Well, what's really funny is I know about this story, and a cadaver came back to life when it got saline instead of formaldehyde.
That would be something.
Also, I'm going to go with my first brain was going to say India, but then it occurred to me, like, they don't have fucking formaldehyde in India. They're not doing this stuff. So this has to be like Australia.
Russia.
Oh, I'm surprised they have that there, but okay.
Plot twist. Katerina Fedyeva had a diagnosis of ovarian cysts. Causing no symptoms and usually disappear on their own. However, some women require an operation to remove them. Her doctors felt removal of her cysts would better prepare her for pregnancy. And according to reports from the Russian state news agency TASS, a Russian government-owned television network, she scheduled a routine laparoscopic procedure on March 15th. Following her operation, a nurse mistakenly gave Fedyeva a solution containing formalin. Formalin contains formaldehyde, a colorless chemical that is typically used to embalm the dead. At room temperature, formaldehyde is a gas, but when used in a 37% solution with water, it is known as formalin, explained Nicholas Lemos, chairman of the toxicology section of the American Academy of Forensic Sciences. Formaldehyde, he said, is a potentially very toxic substance. Nearly immediately, Fedyeva's temperature soared, and she suffered severe abdominal pains. Her medical team recognized the blunder. That's good.
Blunder. Blunder. Yeah, that's a blunder. That's an oopsie. I made an oopsie.
To save her from being mummified alive, they tried to flush out her her stomach. When Fedyeva woke, she whispered, "I'm dying," to her mother, who believed this was only a hyperbolic complaint. She added,
"Only in Russia did they put formaldehyde in your stomach. You wake up and whisper to your mother, 'I'm dying,' and her mom's like, 'She's exaggerating. This is no big deal.'"
She always uses hyperbole. The docs spent a long time talking and were arguing amongst themselves. Nobody wanted to take her on.
Fedyeva Nobody helped her. They're all listening to her. "You do it. No, you do it. You do it. You do it. No, you do it. I did it last time." Meanwhile, she's like, "You can't see anybody. Just hit the button there. It'll flush my system. I already told my mom. She thinks I'm exaggerating, but I know how to do this." And they're like, "Hey, you do it." Yeah.
She was transferred to another hospital where she became comatose. Next, she was moved again to a federal medical center in Moscow for what her doctors believe would be a more effective course of treatment. When her organs began to fail, doctors connected her to machines to keep her alive.
And then the machines sucked the life out of her.
Doctors said they had done everything to save her. She regained consciousness.
No, actually, you did the exact opposite of everything to save her. You did everything to kill her.
Though she regained consciousness, her condition remained serious. Unfortunately, it was not possible to save her. On Thursday, 3 weeks after her ordeal began, Fedasia died.
In return, the hospital had to give her family a goat, because it's Russia. By the way, in the United States, doctors save you from disease. In Russia, doctors save disease from you.
That is a shitty way to go. Like, you went in for a surgery that you might not even need.
Poisoned
and then
to death by your doctor.
You got poisoned and died, and then it takes 3 weeks.
Coincidentally, her husband happens to live in Britain and was rumored to be a spy. Oopsies.
In other news, a New York dairy farmer kills 51 cows, then commits suicide. Locals aren't saying much. Expect to share that hardships continue.
I mean, what's there to say? We all thought he was a little sad. We didn't think he'd take out all... And by the way, typical of the media, if this guy had used a gun, then we'd have covered the whole fucking thing. But because he's not using the gun to kill them all, I assume he's not using a gun. Although I don't know how you'd kill 19 cows if you weren't using a gun. You know, think about it. A gun is a really efficient way to kill people. Yeah.
In Copake, New York, an upstate dairy farmer shot and killed 51 of his milk cows in his barn before turning
the rifle on himself.
Holy
shit. You were all scared to death. Those fucking cows must have been. The first one goes down like, hey, what the fuck was that? Like, but then like halfway through they must have been like, he shot 25 of us. We could just bull rush him. I don't know what that means. We're bulls. We just run at him. No. By the time we get the last cow, must be standing there going, am I the smartest cow out of all the dumbest fucking cows in the world? We're locked in a barn. And he just shot us. We could have done something. They must have just been terrified. They must be horrible.
State police discovered the body of Dean Pearson in the barn on Thursday. A visitor found a note Pearson had left on the bar door that said not to come in and to call the police. State police would only say that Pearson was having personal issues. The upstate of Hamlin Copake is about 115 miles north of New York City. Local farmers buried the cows outside the barn Friday. They would not discuss Pearson or what had happened, but one of the men said these are hard times to be a farmer due to the cost of milk being in decline.
Okay, first of all, why do you have to bury the cows? I've never even heard of such a thing. It's a cow. We literally
What do you do with them?
You just eat it.
Yeah, they're weird if they're dairy cows, though. There's different kind of cows. A dairy cow isn't one you typically eat. It's a different breed than...
I'm sure you could cut it up and feed it to other cows or something.
No, that's like how you get mad cow. You can't feed your own... You can't eat your own species.
You feed it to pigs then or something. I don't know. All those just seems weird to dig graves for cows.
Well, 51 of them seems excessive, too.
But if he doesn't kill himself, all he did was, you know, butcher some animals. As much as like you go, oh, what a tragedy, he killed 51 cows. I don't know. They do that all the time on farms. Now, they probably don't walk from stall to stall with a shotgun, but they basically do. It's a brutal industry.
Weird, it's an odd story. In other news, nearly 80 people are dead from bootleg alcohol tainted with insect repellent and cough medicine. Do you have a guess on what country this happened in?
Florida?
Indonesia. Go ahead. You want me to go ahead?
No, my first thought when I heard bootleg alcohol is I'm like, what asshole? But my cousins were talking about this at Easter. there's some TV show where like rum runners and they make bootleg alcohol, and I'm just like, why? It's like,
but like, yeah,
because a buck a can for a beer or whatever, you just go to the store. Like, you have to go out of your. We literally have entire sports that exist just to sell alcohol. There's no shortage of it. Why would you make it yourself? However, Indonesia, it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, nearly 80 people in Indonesia are dead, and 90 others have been hospitalized this month after drinking toxic bootleg liquor containing ingredients such as cough medicine and insect repellent, officials said. Authorities said Tuesday that 45 people have died in three locations in the province of West Java, while another 31 people died earlier this month in the capital, Jakarta, and satellite cities. The head of the state-run hospital in Sika Lingka, Yani Sumpena, said doctors were overwhelmed with the influx of patients suffering from alcohol poisoning. Since April 6th, there are 93 patients in our hospital, while our capacity is very limited, only 19 beds. So the rest we refer to the surrounding hospitals.
What the fuck in the hospital are you? You only have 19 beds. That's barely a dorm.
While drinking alcohol is discouraged, it is not illegal in Indonesia. They banned the sale of alcohol from tens of thousands of mini-marts and other small stores in 2015. However, high taxes on alcohol have spawned a black market for booze among the poor in the world's most populous Muslim nation.
Awesome. I love it. The kicker in the end. It was government regulation that did it. Taxes caused people to die from bootlegged alcohol.
Authorities said potentially lethal methanol can be a byproduct of bootleg distilling, and the tainted alcohol is also sometimes mixed with soft drinks. In the recent spate of deaths, police said pure alcohol was sometimes combined with ingredients such as cough medicine and insect repellent. You know what? That's the sort of thing that would be popular with teenagers in the United States nowadays. They like to mix up like the Robitussin and sipping on Baleen. All the patients come with shortness of breath, diminished consciousness, and many whose vision is blurred. Deaths from toxic alcohol are common in Indonesia, but the latest cluster of fatalities coming in little more than a week is dramatic, leading to speculation a single large distributor was responsible.
You know that all those nut jobs over there, like all those imams are like, hey, I told you not to drink. We told you. Look what happens. You drink alcohol and you die. What more do you want?
Yes. Speaking of ingesting things and dying, there's a man in a hospital after eating the world's hottest chili pepper. A 34-year-old man had eaten one Carolina Reaper chili in a contest in New York State. The crushingly painful headaches came on in the next few days. His experience has been published in the BMJ case reports as it is the first case to be associated with eating chili peppers. The doctor who reviewed his case has warned anyone eating hot chili peppers.
Chili's baby back. Yeah.
They should seek medical attention immediately if they experience sudden onset headaches. Thunderclap headaches are caused by the sudden tightening of the vessels that supply blood to the brain, a condition known as reversible cerebral vasoconstriction syndrome.
Doctors aren't exactly poets, are they?
Doesn't flow that well.
But I like when they have to give people the advice, if you have these sudden onset, terrible pounding headaches, you should see a doctor. Oh, really? No shit, Sherlock. What the fuck do you think I'm going to just like? It's like, if you're bleeding out of your ass, you should see a doctor. Really? Duh. Also, stop eating the hot peppers, people. You're just assholes. You're all just hipsters. It's not a thing. You're not enjoying the food. You don't like. This doesn't prove that you like spicy foods or anything. It's just stupid. Stop doing it.
Immediately after eating at the contest, the man experienced dry heaves. Severe neck pain developed over the next few days, along with a debilitating severe headache lasting a few seconds at a time. The pain was so bad he went to the emergency room and was tested for various neurological conditions, but the results were negative. A CT scan showed that several arteries in the brain had constricted, leading doctors to diagnose him with RCVS.
I hope that he suffers for a while for being a
The Carolina Reaper delivers an average of 1.5 million Scoville heat units. As a comparison, jalapeno peppers score between 2,500 to 8,000.
Like, seriously, how is that a thing? Like, how is there a food or a plant or whatever in the universe that is that spicy? What the hell? It's like saying you, like, ate a hot coal. At a certain point, is it even food?
I think that pepper in particular was, like, created. I don't think it existed, like, naturally. I think people fucked with it to make it super spicy, and it's a challenge for people who like spicy shit. I am not a spicy person. I don't like spicy food. I think it just burns your mouth, and it's dumb. But that's some hot shit, man. Like, what are you doing? Like a jalapeno, I think, is hot enough as it is, you know, and then you're going to multiply its intensity by literally, I don't know, 500,000. What the fuck are you doing?
I just realized, though, I like this now. I like this pepper. This pepper is a genetically modified organism.
We are using
to weed out the stupid. I like it. I dig it now.
Let me find out. You can find out.
I'm sure we bred.
Here we go.
Most of our foods we bred.
This is good. The Carolina Reaper, originally named the HP22B, is a cultivar of the capsaicin Chinese plant. The plant is red and gnarled with a small pointed tail. In 2013, Guinness World Records dubbed it the hottest chili in the world, surpassing the previous record holder, the Trinidad Scorpion Butch Tea. Its breeder is...
assholes.
Its breeder's name is Ed Curry. He's from Rock Hill, South Carolina.
And he fucks peppers for a living.
Well, like, real hot peppers, even if, like, you touch them, like, bare hand, like, with bare hands, and then you
touch
an eye or something, it'll fucking burn. I don't mess with that shit.
People are stupid.
Speaking of dumb people, actor and stand-up comedian T.J. Miller is in the news. He's been arrested for an alleged fake bomb threat. Did you ever watch Silicon Valley?
Yeah, I like it. It's a good show.
Yeah, I watch it too. He's facing a federal charge that he allegedly called in a fake bomb threat from an Amtrak train. He was arrested Monday at LaGuardia Airport in Queens, New York. The 36-year-old actor is accused of intentionally conveying to law enforcement false information about an explosive device. He appeared before a U.S. District Judge in New Haven, Connecticut on Tuesday. They were released on a $100,000 bond. The charge carries a maximum sentence of 5 years in prison.
Yeah, that's a big fuck up. You ever got so drunk that you called in a bomb threat on the wrong train? Like, shit, what if there had been a bomb? What if he'd actually seen a bomb and called it on the wrong train? What a moron. I don't think he's doing very well right now. He's had a bad go of it lately after having an old college girlfriend accuse him of choking her until she passed out during sex and all kinds of stuff.
Sounded like you
get kicked
that.
Off your TV show. Get kicked off your TV show.
Yeah. He was on Crashed a lot too on HBO. He made a couple appearances on there. And I think he was on Jeselnik's show back when it was on Comedy Central, but Miller called a 911 dispatcher in New Jersey on March 18th and reported that he was on Amtrak train 2256 traveling from D.C. toward Penn Station in New York City with a female passenger who he said had a bomb in her bag. Amtrak officials stopped train 2256 in Westport, Connecticut. Passengers were told to detrain before bomb squad members boarded and searched the train. No evidence of any explosive device or materials were detected. An investigator then called Miller back, and he gave a different description of the woman. Miller's alleged to have also claimed the woman kept checking her bag without taking anything out, kept asking the first-class attendant what the next stop was, and seemed to want to get off
the
train.
A for-sure sign of a bomb. Yeah, it's a for-sure sign. Oh, she looked at her bag and didn't take anything out. Must be a bomb.
Miller was found to actually have been traveling on Amtrak train 2258, not 2256. That train was also searched and found to have no explosive device.
I know that they have to do it. I know they had to search the second one, but when they're going through the second one, I bet they're all going, yeah, I bet there's really something here now.
DOJ officials added that Amtrak officers interviewed an attendant from the first class car where their actor had been sitting. They were told Miller appeared to be intoxicated and been involved in hostile exchanges with a woman who was sitting in a different row from him in the first class car. So it sounds to me like he was shit-faced and decided he was going to call and try and get this lady in trouble, but was not really thinking clearly when he made this call.
Yeah, he's going to be visiting Dr. Drew someday, that's for sure.
You don't like this prank?
Oh, I just... I am a big shit stirrer, but I do tend to draw the line at anything in the realm of domestic terrorism.
Fair enough. Speaking of people who maybe, I don't know how you define them as a domestic terrorist, but the kid who shut up the school in Florida wants victims to have his inheritance. I'm not sure how giving dead kids money helps, but something, I guess. And
so,
finally...
So when his parents die, he wants that money to go to the parents of the kids that he killed.
Yeah, it's odd. Or I guess people who survived and just got shot a bunch, you could give it to them, I suppose. They probably just rather
shot. I bet there's one kid in that class, like, who knew him a little bit. He's like, I want his DVD collection. Like, I call dibs on the action figures. He's got some things that they're not even out of the box yet.
Dude, he has guns he hasn't even used. I want those. It's a bad joke.
I wonder what they do with the guns he has. I guess they destroy them. I don't know how you destroy a gun.
I don't know. I've seen people were like chopping up their AR-15s after with saws and stuff.
I don't know why, but I feel like if a gun was used in a mass murder like this,
yes.
You can't, like, if you melt down the metal, you can't use the metal for anything else because it's haunted metal. It's like Indian burial ground stuff. Like, if you put, like, that gun metal into, like, fillings for teeth or something like that, like, those teeth would fall out and stuff.
And lastly, we have the story of a rural town in Alabama.
Aren't they all?
Is Montgomery rural?
I don't know.
Me neither. Right now, dozens of train cars carrying 10 million pounds of poop are stranded in a rural Alabama rail yard. Technically, it's bio-waste, but the 982 residents in the small town of Parrish, that's just semantics. They want it gone. The load has been there for almost 2 months, and it's making the whole place smell like a rotting animal carcass. To add insult to injury, it isn't even their poop. For the last year, waste management facilities in New York and one in Jersey have been shipping tons of bio-waste.
It would be
kind of
weird if it was their poop, if it's on a train. Like, they just loaded it up and then it didn't go anywhere.
That would be weird. Waste management facilities in New York and Jersey have been shipping tons of bio-waste, literally tons, to Big Sky Environmental, private landfill in Adamsville, Alabama. But in January, the neighboring town of West Jefferson filed an injunction against Big Sky to keep the sludge from being stored in a nearby rail yard. It was successful, but as a result, the poo already in transit got moved to Parrish, where there are no zoning laws to prevent the waste from being stored. Parrish Mayor Heather Hall said she is doing everything in her power to get the freight out of her town. It's so frustrating, Hall said. Last week, Hall met with Alabama Governor Kay Ivey, and she and other Montgomery lawmakers told Hall they would help get it sorted out. They're trying to work behind the scenes to get us a little bit of help, but we've been told that for weeks, and there's still no solution. Hall said the stench permeates everything. The rail yard is across from a baseball field and next to a softball field. Parrish only measures about 2 square miles, and pretty much everything is within smelling distance. It greatly reduces the quality of life. You can't sit out on your porch. Kids can't go outside and play. And God help us if it gets hot and this material is still out here. On Tuesday when Hall
It is rural Alabama, CNN, I mean.
On Tuesday when Hall spoke to CNN, the temperature in Parrish reached 81 degrees. You can't open your door because that stuff gets in your house. It's really rough, said Parrish resident Robert Hall.
I bet it's awful. I bet you can, like, chew it.
Oh, God. Alabama.
I get that, you know, as the saying goes, shit happens. But, you know, they couldn't just, like, move the cars down, like, 1 mile. They'd stop it right there.
I guess. I don't know. I don't understand it. That's why I mention it. It seems very, very odd.
I bet you every single one of those people in that town voted for Roy Moore, though, so fuck them.
Did you hear the sound the train made when it pulled into the town?
Poo-poo?
Ah, fuck. Yeah, chugga, 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 chugga. Poo-poo!
All right.
That's all
and
I got
on that
for this
note,
week.
Everybody. That was MMA and stuff here at HalfGuarded.com. Make sure to rate, review, and tell all your family and friends. If you do that, I'll be really happy, and that'll make Matt happy, because then he won't have to hear me whine. But until next time, next week, I'm going to sign off for us, saying to one and all, good fight, good night, et au revoir, mes amis.
Get up, cocksuckers, it's all over. Listen, we had a rough couple of months. Fucking Katrina's cousin Maria, the other one, Puerto Rico, Houston, fucking Florida. Listen, it's been tough up to now. The earthquake in Mexico, you know, the White House, whoever the fuck is going on. But it don't matter. They want to shoot, it's time for us to fucking shoot, cocksuckers. They want to get down and dirty, don't forget who the fuck we are, you understand me? We're the baddest motherfuckers out there. You send a message to that fucking North Korean, he's going to be sniffing my dick and sucking my asshole. That's the focus. We're going to North Korea in like a year. It's going to be an island. It's going to glow in the dark. You know why? Because we're Americans, cocksuckers. Who the fuck do you think you're dealing with? Stop with the gun control. They're selling more guns than ever the last 3 days. Stop with the fucking whining. Stop with the Russians on Facebook. I don't give a fuck. Worry about yourself. Keep your eyes open. And get the fuck off Snapchat and fucking Twitter, cocksucker. Stay black.